Let's accept that. 9 hours, Valerie. Do we have members ready for our meeting?
Chair, the committee correct. I am just waiting for, I don't see the RTMC online yet, Chair. I'm waiting for them to connect. But in terms of members, the meeting definitely correct. We have now Mr. Hunsinger, Mr. Sithole, Mr. Sithole, yourself, Mr. McDonald, Mr. May.
Wow.
And I've just connected the RTMC advocate CB.
Okay, so we're correcting, good to go.
You are good to go, Chair.
The DM is here.
Yes, Chair, as well as the DG, and senior officials from the department.
Okay. Thank you very much. A very good morning to all of the portfolio committee members who are here. Let me also extend my greetings to our officials, the officials of the Portfolio Committee on Transport, the Deputy Minister of the Department of Transport, and all the officials that are with her in this meeting. Who else do we have, Valerie, that I've not mentioned?
I think you have mentioned everyone. Just a reminder, Chair, of the apology from the minister who's attending in CCC.
Yes, I was still greeting people.
And then, Chair, we also have the state law advisor who will be here for the second agenda item on the deliberations of the National Traffic Amendment Bill.
Mayor Richardson.
Yes.
Okay. Just remind me when she's here so that I acknowledge her presence.
She's already here, Chair.
Ms. Richardson, how are you?
Morning, Chair. I'm fine. And yourself?
I am fine. Good to go. Thank you very much. I hope we have a fruitful deliberations today. I'm sure our energies are still too high. Let's use them for the benefit of the people of South Africa. Apologies, Valerie. I know you have all just touched on the apology of the minister. We have gone where?
In Triple C, Chair. I have not received any apologies from members. Mr. Mabena just joined the meeting, so maybe the other members will join the meeting as soon as it starts, Chair, but there are enough members to start the committee, to start the meeting.
Okay, thank you very much. In terms of the agenda in front of me, the department shall have to speak, because they have to brief the committee in terms of the online license, booking system, and all other matters related to vehicle and license renewals. Let me then welcome into our meeting the Deputy Minister of Transport, and allow her to lead us on this matter. Deputy Minister, good morning.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. Let me also greet the DG of the department, Mr. Alec Mwemi, RTMC CEO, Advocate Makosini Msibi, all our senior managers from the department and state-owned companies that are reporting to the department who have joined us here today. Chairperson, I want to believe that the first item on the agenda is related to online bookings. followed by the RSR bill.
You are correct, Deputy Minister. The first item is online booking, and then the second one is deliberations on the National Road Traffic Amendment Bill, which will actually be the business of the Portfolio Committee in terms of where we are now concerning this bill.
Yes, thank you very much, Chair, about that. Let me indicate, Chairperson, that the Department of Transport is working on a number of deliverables to ensure service delivery on key programs that have been introduced. And as a department, we are currently looking into our existing legislations. We are looking into the programs that are out there that have to improve services to our people. On the online booking system for vehicles renewals, and the RTMC in this case is the lead department that will be presenting on the status of the backlog and the action plan on the interventions that we will be implementing. However, let me just indicate, Chairperson, that the interventions that constitute the action plan that we now have and that we have put in place on the subject of online bookings, the renewal of licensing, the renewal of learner licensing, the renewal of temporary licenses, as well as the professional driving permits, are meant to overhaul the current system that is plagued with inefficiencies and in the main, the rampant corruption, and deliver one that is fully responsive to the needs of the end users. The RTMC, as I've said, is a lead agency, is central in our interventions, not only because it is the custodian of the innate system, but also because it carries our collective mandate to bring coherence to the traffic management value chain across all spheres of government. The objectives of our interventions is to improve service delivery and enhance efficiency in the functioning of DLTCs free from corruption. Learner and driving licenses remain a pervasive challenge, as members are aware. The difficulties experienced by citizens in booking slots through the online platform where this has been introduced is a serious cause of concern for all of us. We are gravely concerned that the preliminary investigation suggests that corruption is the principal driver of lack of availability of booking slots in various DLTCs across Gauteng in particular. But I must hasten to indicate that we are addressing this matter through the centralization at RTMC of online booking, because we have learned that the decentralization is also one other matter that makes it possible for those that are corrupt to simply block the slots and expect people to pay for them and the desperate people to pay for them. In addressing the backlog arising as a consequence of the COVID-19 restrictions during different alert levels, operating hours for DLTCs occupies the spotlight and requires our immediate attention while remaining alive to basic conditions of employment, which may include issues related to overtime. We are paying a particular attention to the rollout of online services in a manner that improves efficiencies and minimizes the time the end user spends in queues. The ultimate end goal is to eliminate these queues once the full bouquet of online services has been successfully rolled out by the RTMC. The extension of the grace period will cover those who were supposed to, as members will know, who were supposed to renew their licenses, driver licenses, learner licenses, as I've mentioned, during the period from the 20th of March 2020 up until this month, which is today, 31st of August 2021. Any member of the public who is supposed to renew his or her license, etc., tomorrow we'll have to do that as using the normal grace period of 21 days, or renewing it tomorrow, or must have renewed it by now. And this grace period does not cover them. And the grace period, as was announced by the minister, it extends up to the 31st of March. And it aims to deal with the backlog that happened from March last year, when the alert levels were announced and the country was put on lockdown, up until today, which is the 31st of October. And those that were supposed to renew their licenses during that time have this grace period. And the advocate, the RTMC CEO, will explain the role of our DLTCs and the role of the public, because there is a role for all of us. And we've tried to make it possible and easy for members to actually get slots, but also to communicate back to RTMs if they're not able to take those lots. And that is why we will be using all means available, including emails and so on, to ensure that members are able to access our services as quickly as possible and without delays. Other provinces will continue using DLTCs, and DLTCs will be serving those that have to renew their licenses post 31st of August, but also those that have this grace period extended up until the 31st of March next year. Chairperson, allow me to hand over to Advocate Msibi to take us through the presentation. Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members.
Thank you, Honourable Deputy Minister. DG.
Good morning, Honourable Chair.
How's the DG doing?
Okay, Chair. Good morning to the Honourable Members and to the Deputy Minister. Chair, allow me to usher in Advocate Makosin Msibi, who will do the presentation, and then if there are any specific questions directed at the department, we will then be able to respond to them.
Thank you very much. You see, I know protocol.
Indeed, Chair, I see and I appreciate that.
You know it, Chair. My apologies, DG.
Okay, no, that's okay. Advocate Msibi Ndlondlo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Mangede. The members of the portfolio of the committee, as well as the Deputy Minister and the Director General, Mr. Alec Muemi. Chair, as I begin, let me then indicate that you are so indebted to the leadership, the sterling leadership of the DG, the Minister and the Deputy Minister. The DG has gone all out to ensure that this process and this debacle is, of course, dealt with. At the very same time, I will also intimate to the Chair that we have three meetings running. The last day of the 31st of August is the AG with the outcomes of the auditing. And at some point, after the committee is done, I will request to be excused to join the meeting with the AG. Having said that, thank you, DG. Thank you, Chairperson, Deputy Minister. There are 32 slides. On the on-site, I will then begin to deal with the fact of the contents of the slides, that the 10 last slides are dealing with the issue of communication and marketing. Having said that, it will be proper for us to then give the perspective. Can we go to slide 3? Because we want to save time in terms of these slides. And I think we requested the department to begin to beam the presentation. I'm not too sure, Chair, whether that has been done. Ms. Tandiswa.
Ms. Thandiswa Ulele?
No, I'm Lalanga, Chair. I can't, I'm connecting from the cell phone. I'm unable to fly the presentation.
Okay, let me see if my team is well ahead of the department. Advocate, Nell?
Chair.
Advocate.
I just tried to do the screen share. I'm not able to screen share yet. I don't have the co-host permission. So as soon as I get that, I can, okay, looks like it's coming through now, Chair. I'm going to screen share now. This is the one that we got this morning, Chair.
There you are, sharing. Advocate, you are in good hands. Advocate CB, you'll have all your things running as they are doing now. Thank you very much. Back to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. And we are really indebted to the portfolio committee. Can we then go to slide 3?
Slide 3.
This slide gives the picture of the backlog that we have in South Africa, in actually the number of total expired driver's license throughout the country, which is 1,330,000, yeah. And those that have not renewed, which are 793. So that too gives the issue of the perspective of the provinces that are behind. It will be realized that in fact six provinces are behind, which is Gauteng, Western Cape, Mpumalanga, Free State, Northwest, and Northern Cape. Chair, this is despite the fact that some of the provinces have a less number of vehicles that or driver's license that must then renew. Next slide. This is just an exposition of a democratic sketch. Then can we go to slide 6? We'll then begin to inform the committee as to what have we done in order to identify the problematic issues to begin to deal with the backlog in relation to the renewal of the driver's licenses post March 2020, which is when we began to pick up this backlog. We needed to do some number of interventions, which will include the digitalization of mobile centers, establishment of BLTCs managed by RTMC, introduce electronic eye testing and interface with HPCSA. We also had to deal with the improvements on the online booking system, expansion of the bookings online booking system, and the operationalization of the center. These were the pillars that we're then addressing the backlog that we're dealing with, but not only the backlog, but also introducing new operational model within the DLTC. The next slide, 8. Chair, we'll then begin to give as to the end of June, these were the decisions that were taken to ensure that we begin to deal with these matters. They were categorized into 3 aspects, the immediate, midterm, as well as the long-term issues. And this begins to give the status as where we are and what have we done in relation to what we undertook. The next slide. Chair, the issue of the decreasing of the backlog, we have in Gauteng dealt with 2 areas, which is Deep Sloot as well as the Sandton Center, which was going to have a mobile renewal center, which is the 2 buses that were fitted with all the equipment to ensure that they go to communities and ensure that we begin to deal with these matters. And above all, we have also dealt with the extension of the operating hours within all provinces to ensure that we then deal with the matter that relates to the backlog. Key to those were the fact that We included the issue of working on Saturdays. Some of the DLTCs were to work even up to 6 o'clock in the evening. It will then be very clear that it's only one province that we gave an exception, which was Mpumalanga, because Mpumalanga had already, in terms of the threshold that we have decided upon, they had reached already 90%. To that extent, the normal working hours would have made up what is the backlog. The next slide, which will also deal with the issue of sun tin. But key to these areas, Chair, this process has also enabled us to identify the understaffing within all the DLTCs. Those understaffing are consequent to the fact that some of the employees had given in to and succumbed to COVID-19. Some attrition had taken place. Some retirement or some employees had retired and some had resigned. To that extent, those vacancies were not filled, and it became imperative that those vacancies needed to be filled. But also, it was an issue of those that, of course, have conducted COVID-19, and from time to time, they had to be to isolate or to remain home. And that on its own had also given increased the backlog, because the hours of service, as well as the number of people that were to be serviced, was also reducing. Slide number 11. Chair, we had deemed it proper that much as we're dealing with the backlog, but we must also be dealing with the matter that relates to the corruption within the DLTCs. To that extent, one of the pillars that exacerbates corruption within the DLTCs is an issue of the eye test. Much as there has been an issue that has been raised that our LEUs are not working, but the issue of the eye test has been very phenomenal, it will be very clear that most 30% of the cases where we've made arrests relate to the bogus doctors that have given these eye tests, and some of the tests, medical certificates, are also manufactured within the DLTCs. To that extent, we had an engagement and, of course, lobbied the Health Professional Council of South Africa, in particular to the optometrists. And to this extent, we had pulled it through. We are just to sign an MOU so that we begin to operationalize and allow them to interface with our system in giving the results of the eye test. It's unfortunate, Chair, that as we're supposed to have signed on Friday, unbeknown to all of us, the CEO at HPCSA was then suspended. We have started the process and redrafted the documents so that the acting CEO will then sign the MOU. Will then begin to other areas, begin to roll it out to other provinces, where we'll then deal with this matter so that each and every province is covered in terms of the online eye testing. Despite that too, in our centers, we're also beginning to upgrade the issue of the new system of the LEUs that is installed in the centers that are an extension to the current one. The next slide. We also were dealing with the issue of the computerization of the learner license testing centers. We will all know that this is a matter which, of course, is the seed for all corruption at the DLTCs. So we're rolling out the CLTs, computerized learner license testing for all the provinces. In Gauteng, we are sitting at 56%, and we are also completed Eastern Cape and Limpopo in terms of the visits, but we'll now be changing the systems into that process, and deployment is beginning to unfold. We will also show in the next slide 13 what we have done in those, because there are areas that had the CLTTs, which were installed in 2012, in 2011, by the service provider that we had in the department, which is Tasima. However, those systems have become obsolete and they were not working. The next slide will then begin to show, slide 13, will now begin to show where we have modernized this issue of the system. What we see here is a picture of the Bloemfontein Center, Mangaung Center, where we installed the new CLTTs as of the 5th of March, 2021. Those that we had to remove them because they were not working, and to that extent, they were susceptible to fraud and corruption. This is a new look and feel of the CLTT in the provinces that we are rolling out. The next slide then will then deal with the issue of additional sites that we are to introduce in order to deal with the issue of Gauteng in particular in terms of the bedrock, which of course Gauteng is sitting at number one in terms of the numbers, not the percentages. So if we deal with Gauteng, we'll decisively deal with the bedrock that is in the country. To that extent, there were three additional centers over and above the mobile centers that we dealt with that were, of course, put into place and be operationalized, which was, of course, the Eco Park, Waterfall, and Goodiesport. The Eco Park will then address the issue of Centurion, which will leave Tshwane area, and the Waterfall will then address the issue of Johannesburg, which will be Midrand, and Goodiesport will then address the area around Pretoria North and as well as East to ensure that we have sufficient issues. And slide 15 and 16 will then give us the new feel of these centers. But what is important with these centers, they have now been integrated with Home Affairs. Back to the slide 16. They have now been integrated with the Home Affairs. As you go to the DLTC, we then use the fingerprinting that interfaces with Home Affairs and therefore give the picture of yourself at the time when you are taking the ID, and then you'll have a choice of whether you will want to choose or change the picture in the event that we have grown older and that picture was taken when you are a youth. You might want to change and give you that variable. Immediately, this begins to eliminate the visits into the DLTCs, because ordinarily with the old system, you'll visit the DLTC 3 times. Now this one gives you that you must just visit the DLTC once, and the driver's license, you will have an option to then begin that it should be delivered at your doorstep. And the next slide will then bring a new variable into the operational hours. Those centers that I've referred to, the 3 centers, but for now, the 2 operational ones, it's the Centurion as well as the Midrand, will be operating 7 days a week. And they'll be operating from 7 in the morning to 9 p.m., 7 days a week. And indeed, we have already appointed the employees and the registered for these 2 centers, registered examiners, which are 37, which is bringing a new phenomena within the operation of the DLTC. Next slide. Now, what is the impact of this intervention of the DLTCs in the Gauteng in terms of the online booking system, which has been an issue that the public has been complaining about in terms of its accessibility? It will then mean that we are bringing an additional capacity of 1,260 slots per day, and 7 days it will give us 8,820 slots, and per month it will give us 35,380 renewal slot, bearing into mind that the bedrock in Gauteng is about 280. Then what it therefore means in the 5 months or 4 months, these 5 months, this additional issue will then give us more than 73,000 renewal backlogs per month, which will then take and increase the capacity in Gauteng to 48%, which is almost 50% of what currently the backlog is, and the remaining DLTCs will deal with what is remaining in the DLTC space. And then the next issue that has happened, what then has happened, let's go to another slide. Now, parallel to this process, there has been an upgrading of the eNATIS network, because there has been a complaint in relation to the downtime of the DLTCs. To that issue of the connectivity, we had to move away from copper to fiber or microwave to ensure that even those that are still in the copper are not affecting the operations within the DLTC. In Gauteng, we've completed 7 major.
Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chair.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry for interrupting. We don't have the slide 19.
The slide 19 is the one that is beamed here. Am I correct?
Okay, it's correct, but let me also give an indication that the presentation has been reworked. I think the host has intimated that there's a one that we delivered this morning in terms of the upgrading. If it goes to the first that we delivered yesterday, there is slide 19, by slide 19, it's not slide 19. It goes to about slide 25, if members of the portfolio committee have their old presentation. This is a condensed, new and modified presentation.
Jobe. My apology. Let's follow the content, my brother. I hear what you are saying, honorable member. Thank you.
Okay.
You can continue, advocate.
Thank you, Chair. We have also commenced with the deployment of the CLTTs in the Free State, Eastern Cape, and Gauteng. I might even mention this, Chair, at this point, that the online services find expression in Gauteng as well as Nelson Mandela. And in the Nelson Mandela Metro, the Eastern Cape was then asking that we roll out throughout the province, because it has made a decisive and indelible mark in relation to the backlog in the Eastern Cape. However, the process was halted. We are so pleased that on Friday, both the minister and the deputy minister had taken a decision that we roll it further in the Eastern Cape, despite what the hitch was. And also we have, in terms of the extension that was given by the minister that is ending today, we then had to deal with the mobile devices, which I've also made mention of, and the extension of the operating hours, additional to the time when the minister then extended for the first time. We had added in Gauteng the Tembisa DLTC, which has been operational from the 25th of July. So there is more capacity to begin to deal with the backlog in Gauteng. The next slide. Chair, what has now happened in the last 2 weeks? Last week Friday, the minister has extended the grace period in relation to the driver license, which is now taking us to the end of March 2022. Simultaneously, there were amendments that were published in relation to the RTMC Act, which of course was also completed by the department in relation to Section 54. And we are very indebted to the Director General who has driven this process to the culmination of it, to ensure that we are now beginning to be working. However, since this was then in relation to the infrastructure upgrade, we'll then have a waiting period of about 6 weeks to ensure that we roll it massively, the issue of the infrastructure refresh post the approval. The next slide. Chairperson, equally so, the NEC in Gauteng had also appointed the RTMC for the two DLTCs, which is in Eco Park and Waterfall, and this was signed by the NEC on Friday, and it got gazetted yesterday. So that too will also then begin to ensure that there is massive capacity in relation to deal with the backlog and also to improve service delivery, which is the core of this matter. And also the deployment of the smart enrollment will also be on check for September. In terms of the smart enrollment, we're referring to two variables. One is the issue of the rolling out of the digitalization and integration with Home Affairs. The second one relates to the online renewal where people can do this, and the gateway will be provided by the FNB bank so that people have an opportunity to pay by their with their cards, so that we therefore become a cashless operation. And indeed, that will also then begin to give you further options in dealing with this, so you do the service of the renewal at the comfort of your home. But we now know that in terms of the slots, the next slide will now be talking to it, that most of the people have been complaining bitterly with the acquisition of the slots. To that extent, the MEC, as we are speaking, is at the waterfall. They're finalizing this process, and he is going to be launching this application as well as the on the email. For those that cannot reach the slot or have the ability to use the email, can then book their slots to the email, and the email will then say, book the easy way, request a driver's license slot. And that will then have two emails operating. One, it will be the email referring to the Gauteng, which will say request a slot at gauteng.gov.za, as well as request a slot at rtmc.co.za. Then also we have an alternative logging on the online Natis government CO. So what then happens when you log in and book a slot, we will then revert back to you and give you the slot. But this is the email gives you an option, the same way as the JAB is doing, to indicate the area, which is your first preference, because the previous one will get a slot, which perhaps you are in Pretoria, it will give you a slot in Van der Bay or in Heidelberg. So this one will then, you will then choose what is the nearest DLTC in the area, and you'll also give the secondary available area, which is next to your area. So the choice is yours. The public will be spoiled for choice. And also further, this then gives you an opportunity to indicate to us if you cannot take a slot on the day you are given a slot. You can then communicate and indicate that this slot, I'm not taking it because perhaps I'm sick or perhaps I have another commitment, so that it can be given to the next person, as opposed to what is currently doing. Currently, what is happening, we have lost 131,000 slots where people did not take up the slots which were given to them, either being the basis that it is far or they could not take them. Chair, now what is now saying is the fact that we are going to deal with the backlog by the 31st of March, and also the interventions resulted in the 48% increase in the capacity of Gauteng, and also the immediate convenience services for the public. improve system performance and improve stakeholder relation. Now we get to slide 24 that then refers to what are we going to do to inform the public. In slide 25, we're indicating that the social media platforms will be used rapidly and robustly, radio engagements, TV, webinars, and interviews with the media. That's what we are bringing in the space of the extension to ensure that the public is informed of all these variables and services that are available. Slide 26. And also, what is our target audience? We're targeting the driver's license holders, local and national media, learner license serving and vehicle license applications, driving school operators, vehicle dealerships and banks, as well as short-term insurance companies. Slide 27. Chairperson, what will be our communication platforms? We'll then ensure that we have media launches for new services. We're quite aware that Gauteng will be this morning we're informed that they were going to be launching on Saturday and Sunday in relation to the new services that they have dealt with. There will be PR events to showcase improved services. What Gauteng is now doing, as they market the issue of vaccination, there will also be parallel to that, running an issue of ensuring that you also then book a slot at that process in ensuring that it is known. We will also deal with the current affairs media interviews. We have already started. The deputy minister has been on Saturday, and we know that they've lined up a number of interviews with her office as well as the office of the minister to ensure that we are this process is known into the public. And the next slide will then begin to show, this is the field that we're showing in terms of the forecast marketing of the products that we have dealt with, which is of course the youth. You will see that we are also looking at the various age groups and 25 years, 35 years and 44 years in terms of their technology, because they are technologically savvy and they will then understand this, and will also take heed of the social media that the minister is actively engaged into, as well as the radio and print. And this is the look and feel of the new issue that we will be marketing. The next slide will also deal with the look and feel. It also talk to the online renewal, because we need to gear the public into understanding what are the new issues coming, and the fact of the cashless and book and line, we are now beginning to deal with this so that there's massive campaign in relation to this matter and the public is aware of all the variables. The last two slides, let's go to the last slide 30. Now this is now taking to the senior citizens. By law, the senior citizens can walk to any DLTC without an appointment. That is allowed, but in the various DLTCs, they were given particular days. It will be Wednesday or it will be Thursday. We are beginning to say that the senior citizens must now have preference. On daily basis, they will be then walking through the DLTCs and they need to be served as those citizens that can no longer wait, but we have dedicated queues for them to deal with this, or slots for them in this process. And then the slide 31, we're also giving the media launches that will be showcasing the issue of the DLTCs in this matter and how we're going to launch. Just before the last slide, it is important that I must mention that in terms of the impasse that we have, the 2 months in relation to the looting spree, we were affected in one DLTC in KZN, Margate, as well as the Clipdown DLTCs. We are busy and together with the provinces to attend to the repairs that are supposed to be dealt with. We're certain that by the end of September, those DLTCs will be back to operation. Chair, that is the last of the slides that we are taking to. Thank you, Chair.
Advocate, thank you very much for the sound presentation. That 6 to 10 things around. I had already raised an issue of the presentation, which I really just want to say to members, bear with us in terms of the numbers, but the information is still the same. Any addition, DG, DM, are you ready to take some questions?
DG, we're ready to take questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Honorable members of this portfolio committee, you have the time now to ask. I see two hands here. 3, 4, 5. Right. We start by Honorable Uketa Mabala, followed by Honorable Uma Pena, followed by Honorable Pete May, followed by Tony Shwa Baba Chris Hansing, Strinen Ngungwane Lapa, Endaweni Zase Kahlamba Lapitwa. In that order, please.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you. First of all, I want to greet the Honorable DM and the Honorable Chair members, our staff, which is from the department and the portfolio committee staff. First of all, Chairperson, I want to thank the presentation. But there's some few questions that I need some clarity, because the first one is the improvement. When they say they are going to improve the online booking, because the online booking is a disaster, Chairperson. If actually they can give us the insurance support, the online booking, because my son, I'm talking about something that I have experienced. My son has tried several times. When you're supposed to go through, it says an error. It means that there's something wrong with the online booking. If they can actually ensure us about that one. And the other one, Chairperson, I'm worried about this 1,333,156,000 the total expired of licensing. Are they going to make the target for 2022, March 2022? Because if you can check the provinces, there's a lot of things that is going to actually hinder the progress. If they can actually help us on that one. And the other question about the recruitment of staff in Mpumalanga, because according to them, they say they fill 87 vacancy post Mpumalanga in March 2021. In August 31, so that one has been full, it's been filled, or if it was just a target, if they can actually clarify that one. And the last one, Chairperson, is that one, the 31 August MOU with the provinces, if it is the provinces, if they now have the new, or they are going to have a new acting, the CEO or COO, they will actually ratify me. Because if he is new, is that one is going to be signed this year, Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Next member, please.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Towards and towards the two wings, I'm trying to explain it. And thank you very much for the presentation. First and foremost, Chair, I think maybe we just need to, the issue of the electronic eye testing interface with the HPCSA, what does that actually mean? Because ordinarily, if one goes to renew a driver's license, you get there, the machines are not working, you bring in the IT certificate and all of this, but I just want to understand what does it actually mean? You know, the question says online electronic eye testing and interface with HPCSA. The issue of corruption at the DLTCs, we are not going to solve the issue by taking away the service from the actual centers and centralizing it at the RTMC. Because in the main, if you start experiencing challenges of corruption also at RTMC, what does that do? It collapses the entire system nationally. And therefore that means you are in perpetual, you are not in a way, like in a position to assist people to actually renew these things. Because what also happens is that not all DLTCs are experiencing issues as far as the corruption is concerned. Perhaps maybe as an interim measure, centralization of the issue at the RTMC, maybe that can assist. But I think for a long-term solution, you need to ensure that you deal with the corruption at source, which is at the centers. Where they are, so that you can begin then to streamline the services and make sure that people can actually get the slots. The other issue, Chair, which they spoke about, the three RTMC centers, which would be at in Centurion, Midrand, and Kudusport. What is the science behind it? Because one, at the Eco Park, if someone, say, is in Mamelodi, or someone is in Soshanguve and there they can't get slots, you've already taken the service and you've placed it at Eco Park. One of the comments that the advocate made was that people, they are losing thousands of slots a day, because people are saying that those slots are just way too far. People have to spend money and get into a transport and get the only to get there that they can't even renew on that day. But now, because I would then say, because they mentioned that the Eco Park is going to serve the Tshwane region, and then the one at Waterfall is going to serve the Johannesburg region, and then the Kudusport one is going to sort of assist in terms of the two regions. But then you also have the Western end, which has not been catered for. You also have in effect Ekurhuleni as well, on the issue of the extended operating hours. Will only be operating three Saturdays in a month. Why can't they work the full four Saturdays? And also, as far as Tshwane is concerned, in terms of the extended operating hours, Tshwane, you are saying here that you've reduced the working hours. What does that mean? Are you saying now you are working from Monday to Friday, or are you working from Monday to Tuesday? What is the reduced operating hours? I think that needs to be clarified more. And then also, the issue of understaffing is a bit irritating, Chair, to say the least, because there's a general comment which is done here, or that we receive across government services. They're saying that staff have been affected by COVID, but in actual fact, how many employees in real time were affected by COVID-19, and in which centers specifically? And also, you must have a plan. If you have employees that are affected by COVID, you must have a plan to make sure that while those employees are away, you perhaps rope in the existing employees to make sure that they fill in for the for the other ones. And then there was an issue of the attrition of employees. What is attributed to the attrition? Are employees generally moving away from the department because of the working conditions, or are they getting a better offer somewhere? Or is it a situation where someone maybe has reached retirement age? What is the actual issue of attrition? There was an issue that we said here that there were vacancies which were there, which were not filled. And what is the plan in actual field with ensuring that those are filled timeously? The other issue, Chairperson, we did an oversight in Bloemfontein, and we were introduced to a computerized learner license testing center, which I think at the time it had 13 computers, and unfortunately only two of them were working on that day as the entire committee. And we advised that they log the call with the department, and then that the service providers do not come in timeously, and that some of them have been out for months. What are you putting in terms of the contracts with your service providers, in terms of the quality of service that they provide, and in terms of the turnaround time? And what are the penalties which are incorporated in those contracts to make sure that they come in and fix the issues and the bottlenecks which therefore exist within the department? And then also, of the one of the slides was saying that there was a 73,000 renewal booking slots. I mean, that's a huge number, but how many of the 73,000 were actually successful renewals? Because you may find that of the 73,000 which people have booked, only 20,000 of them were able to book. Lastly, Chair, you have Soweto. Soweto has over 1 million residents on its own, but you don't have a mobile center which is catering to Soweto. You also have a situation where the Cape Town DLTC was vandalized during the looting, but you also still do not have a mobile center which is catering for those. We are now left with the Maponya DLTC, which is also was also affected because the mall was closed for an extended period of time. But you also don't deploy the mobile centers to try and assist this. So why can't the department and the RTMC look in terms of maybe rolling out a mobile services center to specifically deal to OCM Cape Town that is down? You have OBS Maponya, which is now overwhelmed with what is happening. So thank you very much, Chair.
Sabakela Pambili, Ubahuma Pena, Zaloja. Asato Landelayo, Ubaba U McDonald.
Good morning, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Good morning to the Deputy Minister and all the other officials that are here. Thank you for the presentation. Chairperson, I just wanted to get clarity on a couple of things, Chairperson, I'll be quite quick. I'm not 100% sure that the maths work out on the extra two license renewal centers, because as Honorable Mabena said, that they've not been able to stay afloat with the renewals with 73,000 applications per month, and adding an additional 35,000 slots is not going to suffice, because they're already behind with 280,000. And if you take it on a sliding scale and on that, it's going to take them more than 2 years to catch up in the backlog. That said, Chairperson, I have a question, Chairperson. The problem in South Africa is that the DLTC, the license center, is not connected to Home Affairs everywhere in the country. So I wanted to know how many centers are currently connected, because currently people are using the system and abusing the system through corruption. You can apply for a driver's license, a learner's license with a fake ID in one province, go to another province and do your driver's test with the fake ID. Then, because it's not connected to Home Affairs, you will be issued with a driver's license with a fake ID, which is now an accepted form of identification, and that people can do all kinds of things, from bank accounts to open credit agreements with because the system is not connected in total there. This will also assist the department and also assist the licensing department, because if they can get themselves connected to everywhere to the Home Affairs system, then people can go to the banks like they do with their IDs and their passports and renew their driver's licenses, and it would reduce the backlog. Chairperson, I want to know how many driver's licenses IDs are fictitious versus what the Home Affairs has. Do they have a figure? Is there any sort of research on that? And can we have a figure on that? Otherwise, thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Akbarem liede Piet May van Oerskap af.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got a problem with my video. Chairperson, I received so many complaints about the DLTCO over the last few weeks in the Nelson Mandela Metro. But I would like to thank the DG and his personnel. I think it's one of the most positive presentations I've attended over the last 2 years. Thank you for the hard work. I really appreciate it. You have answered all my questions. But in any case, there's only one. I would like clarity only on one point. The online booking, when is it going to start? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Baya Akbareliede van Oerskap, that they beat me. Mhlekazi, o baba o hunsinga. Ngena Mhlekazi uthethe.
Inkosi kakhulu Mhlekazi Zwane. Chairperson, upon the announcement, I made a media statement where I expressed our gratitude and appreciation for the extension of the validity period. And here again, allow me then to thank everybody concerned with the decision and for taking the decision. Chairperson, we therefore welcome also being confirmed by Advocate Msibi. Through this presentation, we welcome the establishment of more DLC centers, the introduction of mobile centers and kiosks at busy centers has not been expressed extensively in this presentation. But then we also welcome the extended business hours. It's from the 1st of October, then from 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock. And then also the innovation around engaging in expanding online opportunities. And then also a big time saver and labor saver would be to allow the optometrist tests to be submitted directly on the Inator system. We are still concerned, Chairperson, that all these measures, which are greatly appreciated and which we regard as very effective and innovative, that we might not have enough time to employ this, but it remains a challenge, and we will support the challenge and surely hope that we will succeed in doing this. We don't have other choices, because it would be rather bad to then have to ask for further extension and then allow for further extensions. The time frames indeed are very tight, but I welcome deadlines. It is a firm commitment, and it is thoroughly appreciated for the detail which it represents in giving timelines, although these might appear to be tight. And it's quite clear that, you know, the system presented issues in itself, and that it wasn't the motorist. And we well aware and also acknowledge the conditions that we live in with COVID and all the issues that present. So more specifically, Chairperson, slide 21 referred to smart enrollment, and then Advocate Msibi referred to online. Could Could you please, Advocate, give us a bit more detail on specifications around online? Are you referring to website? Are you referring to apps? Are you referring to email? Are you referring to SMS? What particular online systems are considered and prioritized? Has any thought been given to then also in the extension of business hours to include Saturdays? Because that is the big problem. Apart from the fact that you now have the opportunity to try and get there after work, it is still winter and the sun sets fairly early and people have to travel in dark, and we sit with the challenges of curfew for returning in time back to your home, whereas Saturdays would greatly relieve the pressure and also then allow for additional time, daytime especially. The five-year validity is also an issue, and I know it is subject to legislation and regulation, I'm well aware of that, but it appears that upon a bit of research that the general trend is for extended validity periods in terms of the standard validity period. And many countries' validity period are double and more of our current validity period, because if the renewal of the driving license card contributed significantly to road safety, it would have made sense. But let's be honest, it's basically an eye test and a form of taxation which you have to pay, and it doesn't really contribute significantly to improving road safety. So therefore, it makes great sense to me to have a validity period of 10 years opposed to the current 5 years, because it would also then stretch out the renewal the period and the cycle of renewals, and better preparation can be done. Advocate, you also referred to the RTMC taking over DLCs. Currently, DLC is a quasi-entity under the department. Could you then give us further detail on the formal elements involved of DLC currently being a part of the functions executed and roles performed by the department, and then RTMC taking over that responsibility, and which formal agreements are involved with regards to that, but then also particularly around the HR elements with staff and all the aspects related to that. Lastly, Chairperson, your slide 22 mentioned the slot receipt process, and I'm asking and suggesting that a consideration for waiving fines upon proof of a motorist which has a slot receipt in his possession. In other words, when motorists have from their side engaged in an attempt and have proof of the attempt in the form of a request for a slot in the form of a receipt, to then in those cases not pursue in fining such motorists. Those are my questions. Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks again, and also for the extension then of the validity. I think it's a great relief to many motorists and especially to fleet owners. So thank you very much for that. Appreciate it.
I do appreciate Mhlekazi. Enkosi kakhulu. Ndate Jobangu ngwane motoring tsa kwa kwa Maluti. Bula ndate unmute.
Thank you, Chair. Can you hear
me?
Yeah, let me take this opportunity to also consider the presentation and say salute to Ndlondlo there. Extension of driving license by the minister to March next year I would like to know what would happen if the deadline is not met because of the problems similar to the one that forced the minister to do the extension. Two, question of senior citizens. Are your senior citizens or are your service providers informed of the special treatment of senior citizens at the license stations? Because really we experience problems at the license stations. They sometimes are closed as and when officials feel like, because of problems like the cessation of the machines. And this in itself causes a cause for a concern, especially in Maluti Apofung municipality where I reside. Thank you, Chairperson.
It seems as if Ugateola that Makosi teacher. It seems as if Honorable Mapena has not had enough. Mazrakele Pambili.
Long to the Chairperson, long live to the chair, long live. I think there's only one of the questions which I noted here, I saw that I skipped. The two emails that have been provided, one, what is it that members of the public have to write in that email? Because it's easy to say, can I request a slot? Must they put their ID? Must they put their full names? What is it that they need to put there? And also, how many people will be manning those two emails? Because what will happen now when the email someone starts, maybe they send, like they start spamming the actual email. And then what is the turnaround time of the emails? That if I send an email today, this morning, when will I receive that, the feedback? And what is the nature of the feedback? Will I receive a feedback telling me that I have been given a slot at a certain DLTC, or they will they still be asking for the for information? Because or will there be any automated responses or anything like that? Thank you very much, yeah.
Thank you very much, Honorable Member Mapena. Honorable Members, I'm sure that you can see that, if I'm not mistaken, this is the slot that we said we it will enhance our oversight. That is why I can hear members dealing with issues beyond the online booking, and I'm fine with that. Advocate Ndlondlo, back to you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I will endeavor to be as short as possible, but at the very same time, giving detailed answers. The email booking has been raised in the number of issues, so I will link the email question with this. The email question with what Barma Pena has also just asked, the email question will want you to put your ID, your particulars, your residential address, as well as it will be asking you questions as to what is the nearest place that you want to go and the alternative. Within 7 days, we'll revert back to you in terms of acknowledgement of your application. It's an application, by the way. And in 30 days, we'll give you where you are supposed to go in terms of the slot. So that closes that process. The issue of the backlog as of March 2022, it requires of us to go through the entire value chain of working outside the ordinary realm of working. And we quite appreciate that most of the provinces have let us down. And perhaps it might be important for now to indicate that the DLTCs are within the purview of the provinces. It's only in Gauteng
where Gauteng DLTCs are managed by the municipality. And of course, only 7 of those DLTCs are managed by the province. So that's one of the issues in terms of they have the agency agreement that we're beginning to assist Gauteng to review the agency agreement with the municipalities from the performance point of view, because they rely solely on them. The issue of the recruitment of staff in Mpumalanga, those positions have now been filled as of the 1st of September. They will be operating. The MOU with the HPCSA, what we meant is an MOU that begins us to integrate online the issue of the eye testing so that members or optometrists should then load the results themselves, not which the current situation where an individual brings the certificate from the optometrist, which most of them have been fraudulent. And we have arrested a number of bogus doctors who have dealt with. And even now, when you go to the DLTC, if you will be advised by the service provider there, or the employee will say to you, your eyes are not in order, you need to go to an optometrist, but I can assist you if you pay an additional 300 or 400 so that your driver's license should not reflect that you must have the driver's license. It's simply because the system currently, it's man-managed, and the new system that we are putting, it's taking away the human element, and the results are automatically being loaded into the system. The person who's assisting you behind the eye test will not know whether you have passed or not. If you go to the DLTCs, there are 4 E's. You go east, west, north, and south. You are told by the person behind. But what we have now done in terms of computerizing that process, it talks to the applicant, not the person behind the bar, and it has timed minutes in relation to how long must you then do this exercise. So those are the new variables. But these new variables are only operating in the new systems that we have input, that we have placed in the RTMC managed DLTCs. It's going to be rolled out into the country once it's operational. And I think, Chair, the other issue was the fact of centralization. With centralization, this process, the centralization refers to the online booking system. Currently, the online booking system in Gauteng, as well as in Nelson Mandela, was manned by the DLTCs themselves. What we're now saying, we're separating these issues. The online will be manned at the RTMC. So it's going to be operating as a call center. What was happening in Gauteng that clogged the system? Gauteng, they allocated a 70-30 split. 30% was meant for driver's renewal and 70% was meant for registration of motor vehicles. And that's why you have this process of the bedlock. But what is important in understanding the cause of the bedlock, the Gauteng DLTs were resisting the issue of doing away with the walk-in. What caused these problems are the walk-in, where people come in without an appointment and say, I'm coming to renew. Because in Gauteng, the walk-ins are managed by driving schools as well as runners. So they're making money in terms of this issue. And also, the slots when they were released on those 70-30 split, it's only few individuals that were told that we're now going to release the slots. And those people are on the system and they're the first to get those systems. So we're dealing with that now. In terms of the centers that have been put additionally, and we were very clear that it's additional centers. We'll recall that in South Africa, ever since democracy, we have never come with new DLTCs. The DLTCs that we currently have are the DLTCs that have been there prior to 1994. There's never been new additional DLTCs, save for the Magbonya Mall. So what we are now doing we're beginning to pull and request the provinces to extend the issue of the DLTCs to areas. If you look in terms of how the growth of the townships as well as the cities is not in tandem with the services where they are located. So it's beginning to deal with this matter. Hence the DLTC in Tembisa to then begin to deal with the issue of Eguguleni. It's not adequate, but we are seeing this is the beginning of the issues, as well as those that are going to be manned by RTMC, which is both Centurion and Midrand. These are the additional capacity to what we have ordinarily, and that will ensure that we then begin to deal with these matters. Inevitably, I have not intimated the chaos that we are also coming up with, and this is a process, protected process, that we are talking to the mall managers, because we want to bring those kiosks at the mall. So the discussions with the mall managers is at an advanced stage. We are hopeful that we might be sooner or later signing those agreements with the managers of the malls where we've identified the location of the kiosks. The Bloemfontein CLTT, I do believe perhaps that this is an issue of the past. Those CLTTs that were introduced in Mangaung that were not even working, I intimated that those were the ones that were installed in 2011 by the then service provider that was appointed, which is Tasima. So post that process, the CLTTs that were introduced by Tasima, those were imported CLTTs that don't have parts in South Africa. We have began to change those CLTTs and ensure that they can immediately be attended to. And it might be important for the committee to understand that those CLTTs that were seen in Bloemfontein, each CLTT was costing 1 million, when internally, without the service provider at RTMC, we're installing those CLTTs at 300,000. So it's a vast difference. It's not even a fraction of what the service provider was costing us. And you go back to those areas, we have, even in the province, the technical services that are stationed in the provinces. We have no problems with the CLTTs. Hence, we're rolling out those CLTTs throughout the country. By end of March 2022, the CLTT that is operational and that is serviced within the country and internally serviced by the RTMC. We have taken note of the Maponya, and so the issues that we had in Maponya, ideally, the issue even goes beyond what we are just presenting. It is a turnaround that needs to be done at the DLTCs, because if you compare our services to what the banks are doing, it's far below the issue. And in fact, when you go to the DLTCs, you'll realize that though provinces are complaining about the staffing, but when you go to the bank and do the parallel between the services that are rendered by the bank on behalf of Home Affairs, as well as what we are doing, you will then find that there's a lot that we still need to deal with, which we are currently doing an analysis and the study so that we are also compared to the private sector. There's a two-year backlog. That was the question. We quite appreciate that the time frames to deal with the backlog of almost 700,000 is quite a steep hill, but the additional hours that we have put into this process and opening up the additional areas will then begin to assist us. The online in Nelson Mandela was stopped on the basis that the department or one official in the department had gotten advice to say that the online is unconstitutional, and that had made the Nelson Mandela to put a hold onto the online booking system. And as I've intimated, the minister and the deputy minister on Friday had given the directive that such an advice be withdrawn. We will soon, of the withdrawal of such advice, commence with the rollout of the online. We quite appreciate that Nelson Mandela was very excited, and there's communication to that effect that the online has brought sanity and has given the community of Nelson Mandela a better service. To that extent, that Eastern Cape was requesting that it be rolled out throughout the province. It's only in Gauteng that we have these glitches because they thought that we'd deal with it. I've dealt with the issue of the kiosk, the smart cards. When we talk to the smart services invariably speaks to all the elements of the fourth industrial revolution, particularly the apps that we're talking about, the emails, as well as the actual online booking and renewal. Now we separate the booking. We are now saying in terms of the approval of Section 54, which the minister has given on Friday, it now allows the gateway to be operated with the bank FNB. So a person can now renew. After 6 weeks, a person will be in the position to renew online at the comfort of his home. The only time that you're going to visit the DLTC is to go for an eye test. But if you have done that eye test with the optometrist will then load that system and you'll pay, and then the license will be delivered at your doorstep. There's no longer an element of going to this. But what we want you to do, even what you are doing with the guideline, the tool issue of the harmonization with home affairs. Now what happens at the DLTC, as you go, as you take your fingerprint, it talks to, it interfaces with home affairs. One, to establish whether you are a South African citizen. Two, whether you have a valid ID and the photo that we see, then we process, because that too is also dealing with the fake driver's licenses that we have in the country. Saturdays and Sundays, the two DATCs that we refer to, both in Midrand and Centurion, are operational 7 days a week, 7 in the morning to 9 at evening, inclusive of Saturday and Sunday. That's a new model that we're dealing with in terms of the contracting of the services. Currently, everybody who's employed at the DLTC is employed in terms of the Public Service Act, or is employed by the Municipal Systems Act. To that extent, anything that will work beyond 8 hours is referred to as overtime. And to that extent, the overtime on Saturday and Sunday, it comes at a cost which most of the municipalities and provinces are saying they cannot afford. So the current staff that is employed by the RTMC, it's appointed in terms of the concept of the call center, where your working hours are governed into that process and not transgressing to an issue of the overtime. The 5-year validity, allow me, Chair, not to touch base on it, and I think the DG and the DM are in better position. However, what we have seen, most of the people, when they come for their eye test, after 5 years, most of the people's eyes are no longer in good shape to be driving without glasses. And that's why the scourge of corruption has been so much high at various DLTCs. The DLTCs that we referring to, the two, we're not taking the function over of the provinces. However, in terms of Section 18 of the RTMC Act, those functions belong to the RTMC. But what we have done, because we are in the transitional process, we too have made an application to the MEC in Gauteng to appoint the issue of the DATCs, because the power vests with the MEC for now, like any other person that applies to the MEC for such authority. The issue of the fine in terms of the online booking and the slip, until the end of March 2020, no penalties are going to come with, but the new system is going to come up with a penalty. But for now, it has been waived. What happens from the person who shares, the honorable member that shares the name with me, there are two issues that have come. What happens if the deadline is not met? We are very hard at work to all the provinces to monitor ourselves, because one of the issues that we have discovered is the fact that the provinces willy-nilly closes the center. For an example, yesterday the radio had contacted us that they had people queuing as early as 4 o'clock in Bloemfontein for assistance, but we then discovered that officials have turned the system down. So that's how they clogged the system. So the vigilance and the oversight has become more aggressive in those areas, particularly the bigger centers were beginning to monitor them because they have to push in all other issues. And we're also aware of the centers that have been closed under the pretext of COVID. They will then close the center and say everybody has been affected, has interacted with a person. However, the limitation is that not everybody can work at the DLTC because in terms of the training that they receive at the DLTCs, it's not an ordinary training that is received by everybody. And the provinces have no capacity to double the number of people that are supposed to be trained. They walk and work through the book in terms of the availability of the positions that they've created, informed by the organizational design that they've dealt with in that. The senior citizens get preference wherever. They're not supposed to queue, and there are dedicated queues for the senior citizens, and they must be assisted at all material time. And also, it has been a song, the issue of the downtown of the system. The system has been upgraded and continuously been upgraded. And we have, to that effect, one of the issues was the fact that the electricity has cost the most of the DLTCs to be down. We have supplied them with the 3Gs and all this. So the issue of the electricity affecting the system, it's no longer something that is happening. But yes, there's been an issue in terms of the LEUs, hence currently we're beginning to deal the issue of the upgrading together with the DLCA, because the LCUs are the product and the purview of the DLCA. The minister has put it in the task team amongst ourselves who are dealing with that matter to ensure that during this process, all those hurdles have been dealt with. I think I've dealt with this issue. But let me share as a parting shot with the committee. Corruption is very endemic. And we do believe, and we don't underestimate our capacity. We don't have that capacity that will be everywhere at all the time. The fake driver's licenses are produced day in, day out into this. But what we have done, we have now begun to train the traffic officers how to pick up on the fraudulent driver's license. And there are a lot of them. Chairperson, also the corruption at the DLTCs, I do believe that the DM can give a better situation. In Mpumalanga alone, we're losing about 2.5 billion in relation to the fraudulent activities that are happening between Mpumalanga, Gauteng, KZN, and the Free State. It's a lucrative business. We've arrested such people, but unfortunately, they are in the purview both of the province and the municipalities, and such people are back into operation. In Lukwatini, where officials were making about 140,000 a day, Tuesday and Thursday, selling their driver's licenses, we arrested similar people. Those people have been transferred to other areas where corruption is also endemic, and some have resigned. So it's just a tip of an iceberg. It's a lucrative deal to work at the DLTC. Most people don't make less than 22,000 a day. Yes, because we're working both with the Hawks and crime intelligence, it takes some time to ensure that that process is bearing fruition. Thank you, Chair.
That was a parting shot from the advocate. Thank you very much, advocate. Where is Advocate Kharbe? Is he with you?
Like I intimated to the chair at the beginning that we have two parallel processes going with the Auditor General is giving support in terms of the audit report, and I'll be joining them once I'm excused from this meeting. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, sure. Thank you very much for that response, detailed response, Advocate MCB. I think we'll move to another item unless the DM wants to say something.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Maybe Chairperson to appreciate and to welcome the appreciation of the measures that we are putting in place by members, I think Honorable Humsinga, Honorable Bitmay, said a lot about that and really appreciating that. And we are appreciating a situation where members alert us on or of any flaws in the system that we are trying to put in place. I believe maybe from a health perspective that there will always be unintended consequences for anything that you do. It may be how correct, but you have got to be aware of that. And if anyone is ready to pick up that and alert you to say, okay, this is what is working, yes, however, there is this which you did not intend, it helps us to act on time, and we're appreciating that. We will be monitoring these interventions very closely, so that as members were asking the question to say what happens if by the end of this extension you have not been able to deal with the backlog. We will be monitoring this very closely. We will be asking for reports on a weekly basis to say how are we dealing with this countrywide, but particularly in Gauteng, where we have most of the motorists not having this, having renewed their driving licenses. On the interface with Home Affairs, I experienced it firsthand when we visited the Oko Park DLTC on Friday with the minister, when I put my two thumbprints and the information came from Home Affairs, my picture that is on my ID reflected immediately in front of me. So yes, it's happening, and we want to take that forward. But Chair, as I close, if in our DLTCs corruption was not as endemic, as entrenched, as systemic as it is, believe you me, some of the challenges that we're raising here today would not have been such challenges. Whether you talk of the machines being old and so on and so forth, if the issue was not about corruption, we would not be having such huge challenges. They will be able to deal with those and use those that are available and still provide the services. It's not every South African who's got a driving license. I think it's about 13 million around there now. I don't know, because when I was in transport, we were talking about the 12 million. The numbers could have increased now. And it's possible they don't, and these do not expire at the same time. And would therefore not be having this challenge. The issue, Chair, countrywide for that matter, is corruption. I visited one before I was moved to DPSA. I visited one, one in Cape Town, for instance. And when I was there wearing my Dugungu Mamanji, a woman came and gave an official in front of me at the area where I was testing eyes and gave her a stack of 200 rands. And she took it and I said, what is this money for? And colluding with the woman, she started by saying, because she had left the room, the woman said, it's my money, then said it's a stock seller, and that it's what are the store. But the challenge is that it's a syndicate from the least junior, from the security outside, to the most senior person. So a person who's supposed to take measures and discipline this woman is also benefiting from the money. And become the stock fell for them to, at the end of the day, to say this is your portion and your other portion. So it's a serious syndicate. But we are trying by all means to fight this corruption. And we're happy when members give us feedback to say this is what is happening, deal with this. We still need cases that are ready to go to court and can stand the test of time in court. And that is the issue. Even if you see that woman, you say, discipline this woman, because now they are fabricating a story. But you say that it happens, if it is a stock file, it is happening during the working hours. So it's a misconduct. I want you to charge this woman for that. But the issue is, it's a bribe. It's not. But they are colluding and they are agreeing. So it's massive, it's endemic, it's a challenge, and it happens across the country. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thank you for the questions that members have asked, because they are alerting us to some of the, you know, the things that we may not be alerted to, and we take them very seriously. We will be trying our level best to ensure that the backlog is addressed. Thank you, Chair.
Makenza, Deputy Minister, Advocate MCB and your team, were, with the permission of the Deputy Minister from our side, you are liberated, sir. Thanks for the presentation, and good luck to the other business of your day. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mangete, once again, the DM as well as the DG and all members of the committee. Thanks and much appreciated. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Siragela Phambili, Kengoku. Item number two on our agenda is deliberations on the National Road Traffic Amendment Bill, Bill number 7 of the year 2020. And Advocate Nell.
Yes, Chair.
Are you capable, willing, and energetic to take us through? I think we left it at clause 13, am I correct?
Chair, clause 16.
16. I remember I did not finish the meeting. Somebody finished this meeting. Clause 16. We go in clause by clause. Over to you, Advocate.
Can the DM leave as well?
Yeah. Wow. DM, let's be generous and allow you to leave. I think, as I've said, this is now the work of the committee, but we'll need the officials that are responsible for this bill to stay behind.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Members.
Sibonga kakhulu, the DM, thank you. Advocate Nella Tonsuorskhan.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 16 is to my right side. So members will see here clause 16 deals with the registration and grading of driver license testing centers. So Chair Mike, just looking at my notes here, it is a substitution of the original clause 9. But as I indicated here, technically there's only addition of reference to the publication of the grading in the government gazettes, because that differs slightly from how it was in the old section. The old section just referred to registration, notice of the registration being placed in the gazette, and there's a change to it going from testing center to testing centers, so to make use of the plural. So Chair, there the new clause will read, on receipt of an application referred to in Section 8, capital A, the Inspectorate of Driving License Testing Centre shall, if satisfied that, in relation to the Driving License Testing Centre concern, the prescribed requirements for the registration of such a testing centre have been met, register and grade such testing centre in the prescribed manner and give notice of such registration and grading in the Gazette. So Chair, this one is fairly straightforward and easy for members to consider.
Members, let me see hands that says we happy, Honorable Chris Unsinger.
Thank you, Chairperson. Excuse the deliberate way this might sound, but there's no ill intent here. Could we get an indication, Chairperson, what the weight of the word shall is from our legal eagles? Does a shall refer to may, or does a shall refer to must? It's quite an important requisite. It's quite an important, obligation which is asked for here. And I would want to strengthen this rather than to keep the gap for weakening. So if in this context we can get an indication whether shall refers to may or must, and whether we can't strengthen this a bit. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Advocate Nell. Shall refers to may or must. In English, as a teacher, I was taught that shall will always be equal to must. Let's hear the lawyers.
Chair, I don't want to step on our drafter's toes, but if you read it, it's on the receipt of the application, and it's linked to if satisfied. So it's whether or not the application meets all the requirements, then that will happen. So the shall in my reading will mean that it will happen if the conditions are met. But the legal team should also be a chair. I prefer the drafters to give the speech on shall, may, and must than myself, Chair.
Okay. The drafters, the legal team, Baba Uslavis DDG.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we got Paziri here, who are good at the drafting. I've also have Advocate Mahato. They can explain which wording, according to Honourable Msinga, is supposing in this meeting, whether it shall or must. I think let us be guided by the legal mind, Chairperson. I will take you from there, Chairperson. If we can ask the legal minds.
Okay, let's go quickly to the legal minds.
Morning, Chairperson. Morning, honorable members. I will start, and maybe Ms. Pajiri will add on to what I'm saying. Shall and must, Chairperson, are by their very nature peremptory, meaning that it obligates or it forces you to do whatever it is the prescript would be saying. Whereas the may, it's like one has an option. I hope that clarifies that, Chairperson. Thank you. Mapaziri?
Good morning, members. Thank you. Yes, I confirm also that indeed must and shall are peremptory. May is more discretionary. Thank you.
Well, are you done? Ms. Paziri?
Yes, Chairperson.
Zabuti. Let's go back to, I think I hear what the honorable member Hansinger say. Honorable Hansinger, are you clarified?
Yes, Chairperson. In the way that it's been answered is quite clear, and there's enough court sort of judgments and references in law to support what has been said. What bothers me here is that there is a prerequisite which then navigates the obligation of must or shall. upon which nobody else has control but the one who then still decides, you know. So I also don't have a solution for this one. It is sticky. And I would propose that we move on, Chairperson, and let's not tread water here. But I think the problem lies with the fact that we're putting a couple of procedures into one section where it could be broken up and then, you know, have a step-by-step requirement. But I don't see the necessity for that, and I propose we move on. Thank you, Chair.
Proposed. Let's get a seconder.
Seconder, Chairperson.
Seconded. Honorable Manu.
Seconded, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Advocate, at uns führt dran. Clause number 17.
Thank you, Chair. Just getting my screen share up. Just want to bring my notes. Okay, so check clause 17, amend section 11. So section 11 in the bill, well, it will read then, section 11 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection 1. So then the subsection 1 changes to the minister shall. Then there's a removal of the shareholders committee. So the minister shall appoint a person, an authority or a body as an inspectorate of driving license testing centers. So Chair, the Principal Act in section 11, subsection 1, read that the minister shall, after a decision has been taken by the shareholders committee, appoint a person, an authority or a body as an inspectorate of driving license testing centers. So Chair, just my notes to link with some of the concerns that were received. So Chair, on the face of it, it removes the shareholders committee from the appointment of these inspectorates. But the shareholders committee are still involved in the registration of testing centers where these inspectors must obtain their qualifications, but they are removed in this section from the appointment. One can argue that as MECs of provinces are allowed to appoint provincial inspectorates per the clauses following immediately below this, which is 11A, that they still hold some power to appoint inspectorates. But the concern is then what of the MMCs? So the concerns were just that we need the department just to clarify why there's the removal, and then there's also the submission from the AA in slide 54 of the Annexure A presentation. So I just want to pull up that slide 54. Just to refresh members of what the AA said there. Okay, so Chair, there they this is the indication that in the AA's view, they would prefer that the original wording of that subsection 11.1 is retained, and then members can see the response there by the department. So Chair, this is the substitution of 11.1. Subsection 1 for members to consider before we look at the new section 11A.
Are you done, Advocate?
Yes, Chair. This is now just to get members' input, unless Chair wants us to look at 11A before we do the members' input, because they may be linked.
Yeah, let's do so.
Okay, yes, Chair. Then 11A or clause 18, again, my notes just referred to the above concerns. I'm just closing my notes. 11A will then be provincial inspectorates. So 11 capital A1, an MEC shall appoint a person or an organization as a provincial inspector to conduct inspections and evaluations to ensure compliance with this act. And sub 2, the minister shall, in consultation with the relevant MEC, prescribe the powers and duties of the provincial inspectorate. So Chair, these two do have to be read together to see if it sufficiently covers the concern of moving the shareholders committee out of 11.1. And then also Chair, thankfully we had the presentation now by the RTMC earlier, so it might also assist in understanding where some MMCs are involved in DLTCs, as they indicated, it's more prevalent in Gauteng, but there's a move to have it in the provinces, or as the RTMC indicated, for them to take over in some aspects. So Chair, all of this may be clarified by the department, just to make sure that the concern of removing the shareholders committee, as was in the submissions received, is covered. So Chair, this is now for members' input.
Thank you very much, Advocate Honorable Unsinger.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the decision or the consideration of 17 sub 1, where the minister shall, after decision has been taken by the shareholders, which the suggestion then is for the removal of the shareholders' involvement, to me, is an issue of procedure and sequence. As it was, there was this obligation of the minister to appoint a person and authority as an inspectorate following the decision which has been made in terms of recommendation by the shareholders. By removing the role of the shareholders, there's no obligation of the minister then to do this. I'm also in favor of maintaining the role of MECs, simply because the provincial legislature in the provinces do have a important function and role with regards to traffic and what we're dealing with here, road traffic. Also in terms of the separation of powers principle, that the function of the MEC and the role of the MEC, but most importantly for the accountability, that the MEC then takes responsibility and that the national minister has a oversight role to then execute upon each of the MECs. It becomes direct in this regard, whereas the provincial traffic does have an important role, as the national ministers in terms of oversight and control over the provinces. So that is my view. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Ubaba Ulisa Wakwamanu, followed by Ubaba Uketa Mabelisto.
Good morning, Chair. Once more, I think my view is such, I want to say I'm also opposed to the removal of powers from the shareholders committee. However, I want to step back and say, why do we have a RTMC and why do we have a shareholders committee? After 1994, 95, 96, there was a process called constitutional transformation process as it related to matters of road traffic management. Acknowledged at the time there were the central or a, yes, police force. I think Minister Mbalula at the time was in the Department of Police. At the end of it all, it was accepted that a corporation would be the ideal fit. Why was it so? It was acknowledging that there are pertinent responsibilities that need to lie with the MEC. However, due to non the development or the evolving of the development of the RTMC came about, which then acknowledges that these resources should be pooled together. Now, from my reading, this to pull back that again, that pulling together and centralize it, and it is not the direction that we should be taking. And of course, I'm subject to assumptions are wrong. So I'm saying, as I want to propose that the issue of the minister being alone to, because remember the inspectorate itself, if you leave it with the MEC or the shareholders committee, which means the MEC still has a role, they could give them even more responsibilities than rely on the minister appointing them, which is currently the situation. In the vehicle testing stations and driving license testing centers, those inspectorates are appointed by the minister. The question is, how effective are they and what difference will this bring to the fore? Now, there was a reference there, as the advocate Nell was presenting there, of MMCs. I couldn't get that, but I thought if I got it right, is that I mean, the role of MMCs has never been there, except where the MEC responsible for transport would delegate certain functions, such as testing of drivers and so forth. So my view is that, as colleagues, let us look at this study. What are its implications long-term compared to what is currently happening? So I am leaning towards opposing the proposal. However, I'm putting my thoughts forward, subject to the colleagues. Maybe I'm really wrong. Thank you.
Mondays.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think some of my concern has been covered by members, but I'm trying to check, Chairperson, just getting educated about, or a body. What does that mean when you say a body as an inspectorate of driving license, if you're talking about a body? Because we are talking about the stakeholders, we are talking about the ministers, the MECs, and what the board stands for. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. The body, the hand of Honorable Crimson Singer is refusing to go down. May I help it to go down?
It's persistent, Chairperson, because it begs for attention.
Oh, I thought you had forgotten because I never saw it.
No.
Being removed.
No, I'm quite disciplined, Chairperson.
Okay.
Chairperson, thank you for the indulgence. Chairperson, I also concur that we have to plan for a element of debility. In other words, where we might have a province where there is not an ability to then have an MEC that actually then form an inspector. It is practical, and it should be considered, and therefore I also consider, in addition to what we suggested now, that we consider a safety net and bring in an opportunity where, in the absence of an MEC establishing an inspectorate, that the minister then can engage with the province and upon a set deadline then force ahead to then establish the inspectorate, because we also can't have dysfunctionality and imparity in that some provinces have and others have not, and that there would be inspectorates in some and in others not. So that would more or less, I think, be a good compromise, in that we maintain the principle, we recognize the functions of provinces, and we open the opportunity for the national minister then to engage on the basis of a debility after consultation with a particular deadline to then proceed in establishing the inspectorate, if that would be acceptable. And a body could refer to individual or a formation of people, like in a board or whatever, if that can help. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Onsinga. Let me see the hand going down. Thank you very much. The hand of Honorable Mangu is refusing to go down. Let's hear him.
Thank you very much. I'm of the view that what my colleague Honorable Hunsinger is saying is something that is reasonable. However, experience says something different. For instance, the RTMC Act, at the time, I can't confirm 100% because I suggest it would have been changed now, had foreseen the establishment of a national traffic police with specific reasons why such a unit would be established. Certain interventions and certain interactions happened. As far as my memory serves me well, that didn't happen. We see a national traffic police now, which in essence would find itself competing with local and provincial spheres of government. That for me is a bad example of creating provision for something in the future of implementing something, because that power can be used otherwise to just bulldoze other people. I think it flies in the face of separation and giving the responsibility to provinces and municipalities. Because in many instances, for instance, my example of the National Traffic Police, I'm not aware of any evidence that says this particular authority had failed in its responsibilities, hence the intervention of the National Traffic Police. But we see a duplication. And I know that is not the subject matter, Chair, but I'm drawing a parallel, at least in my view. And I find it very, very challenging in that regard. And the example I made earlier is that currently, and I'm subject to correction, the same inspectorates are appointed by the minister. So what difference will this bring if I'm correct in my assertion? Chairperson, thank you very much. I will subject myself to the views of the committee.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mangu, we'll come to this thing and pursue ourselves so that we move forward. Let's get to the clarification, the body. Advocate Makhado.
Thanks, Chairperson. As I touched on by Honorable Hunsinger, a body could be either an institution that is, whether be it a company or an institution, as the case may be, that would be in a position to provide or render the services that the section would be envisaging, Chairperson. That's the long and short of it. Let me not take too long in responding to that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me just try and get the difference between the interpretation of the two honorable members, so that we move towards trying and having a solution on this. Advocate Nell.
Chair, I think what might assist is if the department just indicates to members what is currently happening. How do the inspectorates get appointed? And why they have the need to almost create this split by adding 11 capital A. I think that that will just assist members in taking their decision on whether or not they would like it to be left as it is currently with reference to the shareholders committee, or whether or not there is a need to have this, bring in this split.
Mm. DG? Or Advocate Makhati?
Oh, thanks, Jefferson. Okay.
Do we still have the DG in the meeting?
Yes, Jefferson is in the meeting.
Oh, okay. I can see there he is, sure. Okay, Advocate Makhati.
Okay. The minister as it is, or the shareholders committee as it is, Chairperson, right? It's made up of the MEC and the minister sitting as the chairperson, right? So if we, and correctly so, if you look at the section that we are trying to amend, it must not be read in isolation with what follows under 11A. This is more of a devolution of powers, right? Moving from the presentation as correctly highlighted or referred to by the RTMC, and that now MECs are going to be vested with the power to appoint inspectors. And this is in line with Schedule 4 on the areas of concurrent legislative making insofar as road traffic is concerned. Thank you. That would be my input.
Okay, you're devolving this power to the MECs. Okay. Honorable Onsinga?
Chairperson, I would like to know what the practical conditions are which prompted the decision to change what is happening out there that would need this particular improvement.
Mm. Yeah. Advocate Makhati.
Okay. Thanks, Chairperson. I think let's go back to Section 7 of the Act, Chairperson, and then I'm going to try to read it to honorable members, because that's where I'm sorry, I'm going through my notes. I'll get to it just now. It says the following. Are you there, Advocate, now? Okay. It says the following. The minister may appointment of inspectorate of manufacturers, importers, and minister may appoint a person, an authority, a person or bodies of inspectorate as manufacturers, builders, and importers, right? And then the powers and duties of inspectorate contemplated in one in relation to the registration of inspection of MIBs shall be as prescribed, and that the minister, that is three, that the minister may in order to, anyway, three is irrelevant to the issue at hand. Right? That's that. And now, just a second. There are certain powers and duties that would accrue to the inspectorate, and those, for example, and a distinction needs to be drawn between three institutions. One, the VTSs, their powers and duties are set out in Regulation 137E and Regulation 129, read with Section 41. Whereas with regard to DLTCs, their powers and duties of the inspectorate are outlined in Regulation 97, 93, read together with Section 11 of the Act,
Whereas with MIBs, their powers and duties are outlined in Regulation 40, right, together with Regulation 44 and Section 7, Chairperson. I hope that assists in the debate. Thank you, Chairperson.
There we are. Honorable Kunsinger.
Chairperson, it does not assist. My question was, what happens out there? In other words, outside, in practical terms, in operational terms, which prompted the idea then to change this. Chairperson, I'm of the view that it should be maintained as it is, since we don't have any idea, you know, for what reason this was, or we must just paint this in order to get more sort of practical input of what happens or what does not happen, which prompted this idea to then introduce or recommend these changes. To move forward, Chairperson, I propose that we maintain the principle of MECs being the appointees of an inspectorate, in particular because of all the other functions which has been highlighted now by Advocate Magatu, simply because we need a wider spread of control and execution of regulation, rather than to have a single body. We have variances, we have differences. We've just been dealing and still are with the illegal conversion of panel vans to taxis, which has happened. And I think the frequency of this will just increase, and therefore we would rather need more and particular sort of area driven inspectorates. But then we still sit with a situation where we might have an MEC which does not succeed in establishing or is reluctant to establish this inspectorate, upon which I then suggest that the national minister, after fixing a deadline for a particular MEC, then to respond to this particular legislation, upon which this MEC might not respond, that in such case, the national minister can then, for the sake of the importance of control, but then also with keeping in mind the principle of check and balances. And I think it's more important that we have improved check and balances. And I'm also pondering in a section of my head about a combined inspectorate, where the national minister has the authority to then appoint a number of appointees in each province over and above what the MEC then, in terms of number of local specialized people, is allowed to compile. So there's a third variance, which we can also consider, which will then indeed improve the check and balances, because it might also be that a particular MEC appoints people which the national minister might not be happy with, and which the functioning then is partisan instead of improving check and balances and control. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Unsinger. I think we have two options here, maybe to try and seek some coming together on this issue. I suggest let's park this matter, this clause 70. We'll come back to it. Let me hear Mepumelele first. Mepumelele.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Greetings to all the members and everybody on the platform. Chairperson, having listened to the questions and having looked at both what Clause 17 and 18 seeks to achieve, I think in reading what is currently in Section 11 as it appears in the Principal Act, and what the department...
Apologies. Can we ask Mepumelele to sit on the table so that we can hear her? I think we need every input she's giving.
Recording stopped. Recording in progress.
Chairperson, must I show my video or what table?
No, you are clear now. Will you please start afresh?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you so much. I was indicating that having read and heard what the members are indicating in terms of the concerns on these provisions, having looked at clause 17 and clause 18, what I appreciate and understand these two provisions to be attempting to do is that on section 11, it was initially given the power to appoint an inspectorate that deals with driving licenses to both the minister, having had a discussion and consultation with the shareholders committees. But now, because of the provision that Advocate Bakgato pointed us to last time, which is section 93A, which indicates that the shareholders committee in certain provisions where it appears is now becoming the minister. Section 11, fortunately, is not one of those. So what clause 17 now seeks to do in terms of the current section 11 is to give the minister the power to appoint the inspectorate in a sense where the power is given to the national minister. Whereas section 11A is also generally and broadly giving the same powers to the MEC to appoint in instances where they feel there is a need that they should also be appointing inspectorate that should conduct the inspections and evaluations that fall within their competency as a provincial legislature or a provincial governing body. Hence, the MEC given the same powers in 11A in broader terms, as opposed to those that are in section 11, which are solely then left with the minister. So I'm thinking the way that the department has drafted the two provisions and separating them, it is basically does achieve what the members have been indicating in terms of section 11, leaving it with the minister, and 11A extending the same power as well for the establishment of provincial inspectorates. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mepumzile. Pumelele, the surname?
It is Ngema, Chairperson.
Madlokov.
Thank you.
May I return?
I believe that the partners has sufficiently covered it to this point. There's nothing further to add. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. It means if I interpret it correctly, the concerns that were brought by Honorable Lansing are covered. In terms of provinces doing their own own appointment, where they need to then minister appointing at national, where it was actually with the shareholders. Honorable Lansing?
Chairperson, as I read section 17 or the proposed section 17, sub 1, the minister shall appoint a person, an authority or body, as an inspectorate of driving license testing centers, which means it currently the driving license testing centers is a function of provinces, so that a provincial MEC following approval of this amendment as it stands
And a provincial MEC would have function and role of provincial driving license testing centers, but would not have the power for inspecting the centers which he or she has control of, which to me just doesn't make sense. You can't be in control of something and you don't have the power to inspect it. It just doesn't make sense.
Hmm. Okay, Honorable Hansinger. I'm still available.
I'm here, Chairperson.
Yeah. That is a new point that you are raising. We will entertain it. The point I was raising earlier on, which I thought you will have an understanding on, is that this section that we are currently busy with is actually affecting the removal of the shareholders. Where there are shareholders at national, that power is given to the minister. And if we are fine with that, it means then we'll then move to this new concern that you are raising and iron it out. Am I understanding you well?
You're clear, Chairperson. I am not in favor of the removal of the MECs. And the shareholders. I'm not in favor of that, Chairperson, particularly
You're not in favor of the removal of the MECs?
Yes, I'm not in favor of that. I'm in favor of the retainment of the MECs to be able to establish a inspectorate. Simply because it relates directly to their function in terms of provincial traffic.
Mm-hmm. Mayor Madlogov, thank you, Honorable Member.
And upon failure, Chairperson, with all due respect, upon failure to establish an inspectorate, a deadline can be set and the National Minister can intervene and then for purposes of function and control establish it in his or her authority.
Okay. Thank you very much. Madlogov?
Yes, Chairperson.
I see your hand up, ma'am.
Oh, Chairperson, I didn't see it. The legacy hand. Oh, gosh.
Okay, the legacy hand. Okay. Honorable May?
Thank you, Chairperson. Referring to the inspectorate over the DLTC, my practical experience, I can't tell you how I feel. The manager at Jabertina, the DG, knows about it. He totally ignored the instructions of the inspectorate to keep the DLTC open till a day before we start the renovations. It's nearly a year. It's closed. And nothing was done about it to open it. The manager overruled all of them, even the municipal manager, the inspectorate and all of them. And I'm really disappointed. Thank you, Chairperson. So I can't see any reason why there must be inspectorate if they've got no powers. Thank you.
Maybe let's park this issue. We'll come back to it. With your permission, Honorable Members, I think Honorable Hunsinger had said it. Are we fine with that? We'll come back to this issue.
Yes, we are fine, Chairperson. Let us pack it. Listening to the discussion, there is a need to do that.
Honorable Chris Hunsinger.
Chairperson, also just mindful of what Honorable May said, opening up the opportunity for a combination or a combined inspectorate where in each province the minister can add people or persons of his choice. That will improve the check and balances and then also support the concern which Honorable May now refer to as an example and the real life experience of partisanship. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can we then, as Honorable Chris Sunsinga is lowering the hand, to clause 18? Thank you. Honorable Pete May?
Yes. Chairperson, I would like to mention the manager, Mr. Goodman, in your Bettina. One of his explanations was that there's a lot of potholes. The potholes were filled last year by the community. Not this year, last year, October, November, September, by the community. But one of his excuses is potholes. I've driven that street up and down. There's no potholes. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. We'll attend to that. Okay. Thank you, Honorable May. Advocate Nell.
Thank you, Chair. I think in parking clauses 17 and 18, what might assist is if we can look at what happens if the minister as well as the MEC appoints inspectorates over the same DLTCs. And then if that inspectorate takes a decision, which one carries preference? That might be clarified within the roles and powers that we see there in clause 18. But Chair, I think that we can just keep that in mind and maybe that will assist the department in clarifying those concerns. But Chair, moving then to clause 19. Clause 19 has raised quite a few concerns in the submissions because the clause seeks to introduce a new type of license. So, Chair, this is where we see the introduction of a provisional driving license. Chair, just my notes on this. The majority of the comments that were linked to this clause opposed this introduction. And even though there's this introduction in the bill of a provisional license, I couldn't really see where else in the bill there was reference to provisional licenses. There's no way of testing or a process in terms of obtaining that in the bill. So the department might just want to give members clarity on that. There's no definition in the for the new proposed license type, where the Act on the other hand gives definitions for both a driving license as well as a learner's license. And they expand on that in section 17 and 18, as well as an entire chapter 4. So, Chair, the department will have to give clarity on that. It seems like it's just introduced here and nothing further was there. But, Chair, the concept of a provisional or P-plate type license we see in England, Australia, and Singapore. This is also linked to blood alcohol and breath alcohol levels. I know that in Australia, for example, the P-plate drivers, they cannot exceed a certain speed limit, and they must also have 0% blood alcohol when it is measured. Anything above 0%, and they will have a sliding scale of infringements. So, Chair, that is possibly the only reason why I see the introduction of the provisional license. The other alternative in terms of the provisional license introduction is if we link it to the ARTO legislation, where the proposals of a provisional or a type of license that is then brought in when you have a suspension and you have to redo or re-educate the driver in order to get rid of the demerit points before they can get their fully fledged driving license back. But Chair, that is just the notes. I just want to show members the section 13, which clause 19 seeks to change, is on this side, and the new bill proposes to change the heading to learner's license, provisional driving license, and driving license. And then there's a substitution in paragraph A, which is the one over here, then the whole introduction of A. So it will be a license authorizing the driver of a motor vehicle shall be issued by a driving license testing center in accordance with this chapter and shall be A license to be known as a learner's license. And then there's A, capital A license to be known as a provisional driving license, or, and then the Act will continue to read, a license to be known as a driving license. So, Chair, that is the proposal here. As indicated, quite a few submissions were against this introduction, and my notes indicate some of the concerns about what process there is to actually get a provisional license, what it allows you to do, and so forth. So, Chair, that is Clause 19, amending Section 13 for members. Then just a note, Chair, if members are not in agreement with the introduction of a provisional license, then obviously the drafters will have to do all the consequential amendments where there is a reference, as we see here in Clause 20. There will be some reference to provisional driving license that will then have to be removed if it is not agreed to, Chair. So that's just on a side note for the drafters. Thank you, Chair. That's for members' input.
Thank you very much, Advocate. Members' inputs. Honorable Chris Wunsinger, Honorable Keta Mabala.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think it would be wise to let this stand over so that we consult the R2 legislation. I can recall that provision was made in the R2 legislation for a phase of rehabilitation. I do understand the sanctional value which a provisional license might have. The practicality is something different, because I cannot see where in any practical circumstances, either as an identification of the vehicle through the license plate or through the identification of the driving license proof card, where in practical terms, the sanctional value will be expressed, other than in the central register, which then also would need amendment, because according to legislation and the regulation, your driving license is valid for as long as you live. It is the proof card which stands to be renewed every 5 years. So how would that then affect the principal act, where the legitimacy of your driving license is expressed and defined as being valid for as long as you live? So there are a couple of pieces of legislation which we need to put parallel to this new category. And even if it has value, I don't know where this will be expressed to have an effect on road safety or have an effect on identifying this particular driver, and what the purpose would be, other than to label a person which, for whatever reason, is not in this particular stage, either a learner driver or a proper driving license carrier, other than just being labeled, if it is through identification of any form. Therefore, I do think we need to look at the R2 Act. I do think we need to look at the legislation around the definition of driving license, the validity thereof. But in practical terms, I don't see where this would find any expression and therefore have a particular value with regards to road safety or practicality in administration. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Wunsinger, Honorable Keta Mabala.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, I was I want to get some clarity on the amendment of Section 13. What's the reason behind amending the Section 13? Because the impact that will have when we implement it, the Section 13, and what will be the harm
if we keep the Section 13. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Advocate Mahatu.
Thanks, Chairperson. Simply put, I'm not discounting the submissions that we made as part of our responses to this clause that honorable members of, members of the public made insofar as this is concerned. Chairperson, it's more to enable a situation where people become better drivers than any other thing, Chairperson, right? And then the like I said, it would be wrong for us to not look into these kind of matters because as it is, right? The instances where, and this is an argument that some of our stakeholders have been making that, you know, regulate us as driving schools because you would have drivers that are not properly trained. Right. And then for that reason, we've listened to some of the inputs that have been made, whereas others would see it as something else, but we're trying to make people better drivers and that somebody does not readily sit behind the steering wheel and for want of a better reason, or God forbid, they are involved in an accident or something to that effect, Chairperson. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. John Mutsatsing.
Thanks, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. Just to echo the sentiment that Advocate Makato has alluded to, the intention with regards to the introduction of a provisional driving license is basically to ensure that we start to inculcate the safe driving of novice drivers. Because if you look at what's currently happening now, I get a driving license, I then go and commit various offenses, and I then be treated in the same light as your ordinary drivers. But in the context of a provisional driving license, it's dawned on me to say that should I then misbehave with regards to my possession of a provisional driving license, I may not then be issued with a permanent driving license. In this regard, Chairperson, it starts to inculcate the issue of a safe driver behavior with regards to novice drivers. Chairperson, and to the extent it will also then improve the road safety to a certain extent because they start to behave better with the understanding that there is consequences that will happen should they then transgress road related laws, Chairperson. I submit.
I hear what you say. Let me hear honorable members. We have honorable Manu, then it will be honorable Unsinga.
Chair, thank you very much. I think the issue of a provisional driving license is a noble idea. It is happening in other countries for the reasons that I think Demuta Singh has said. However, what they are not telling us is that in all or most, if not all of those countries, it is mandatory for you to go through a driving school and acquire a certain number of hours or exposure for you to be accepted to say this person has been properly trained. In this country, it doesn't happen. You go to a driving school because they are going to get you a license quicker because you are going to give them more money where they can go bribe the examiner. That is the problem. It is not a provisional license or not. Now, we want to jump and run. The idea is noble, and I'm sure we can find a couple of countries that are doing it. But what the department is not doing is to say, what are the building blocks to get to that level, which I think we should work towards. However, where we are, I don't think it will assist all the ideas that the department is putting forward. An example, I mean, John makes a very good example of somebody who obtains a license. Why doesn't the department start by giving a provisional professional driver's permit? Why doesn't the department start control who can drive a vehicle for reward, either a taxi or whatever, first? Because as things stand now, I can go and get my license to in the smallest of cars and go get my PRP or whatever it's called. Tomorrow I can take a 15-seater with a huge trailer and drive to Mozambique. There is no limitation whatsoever. Whereas the same person I passed with is just using that vehicle to go to work. So I think in the same way as I was advancing my argument on the powers, shareholders and so forth, I think we tend to look at this and hope that a quick amendment will solve our problem. I totally disagree. We must understand what is it that we are resolving. What is the problem? And I agree, people get into a license, tomorrow they are there. But that is not where the problem is. The problem is people go through driving license, I mean driving schools, not all of them by any means, am I saying all of them, but a couple of them. We heard in the driver's license presentation by the DM and the how people buy slots and all those things. Those are the real problems that are causing a problem in the safety of our roads. So, Chair, the idea is noble. I am aware of it. I think I've got enough literature about it. But I think where we want to introduce it and how, it is not going to assist us. That is my submission. As John Mutasing says, I submit. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Hansinger.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, thank you for the input of clarity of Advocate Bahatu and Motsat Singh. I do acknowledge that it might be, as my honorable colleague Mangu said, it's a noble idea. Mindful of the practicality that the learner driver is in control of the officer, who then in his judgment decides, or her judgment decides, that this applicant is fit for a license or not. Whether this person is half fit or fully fit, I don't know how we can describe and allow substandards of being fit to drive a vehicle on the open road. They cannot be offered. And therefore, Chairperson, I'm cautious to feel positive about this. Again, I say we should look at the R2 Act. There might be reasons within the R2 Act. And I also would like to know if a correlation, as in the opinion of Mr. Motsat Singh, was made, that it would in fact assist road safety and it has consequences for road safety, how will this find expression? How would the other drivers know this is a driver to be concerned about? This is a driver rather to be avoided than to drive close. So I cannot see how this, in practical terms, this category of a provisional license, how this in practical terms would lead to improved road safety. If there is an example, I will appreciate it. But in the absence of an example, I'm not in favor of this, subject to provisions which might be correlated to the R2 Act, for which this would then be important.
And I do recall, as I said, elements of rehabilitation within the process of a sanctioned driver. But that's how far as I can recall and what I would propose. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Any take in terms of our legal people, Mayor Richardson and Mayor Pumelele?
Nothing, Chairperson, from my side. I think it's more of a practical issue, as members have pointed out the concerns, and I think the department should just assist us and appreciate exactly the full extent of this envisaged thinking. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Department, do you want to say something before we say what we say here? You're done. You have said a mouthful.
Not from my end, Chairperson. Thank you. Sorry.
I hear that, unless I'm wrong, I hear that members are saying the issue of the introduction of a provisional license from the learner's point of view, practically is not going to solve any problem. Getting to the law, as we are dealing with it now, we need to have a proposal and a seconder for that so that we move on. Because these were the debates.
Chair, a proposal of what? Can you repeat that, please, Chair? Sorry, I missed what your summary was saying.
My summary was saying the deliberations that we were involved in. In summary, you are saying, as members of this portfolio committee, although this is a noble idea, but you don't see how practically it is going to help us. As I listen to your views, and I just wanted to test if that is what the committee is saying. It means we're not comfortable with the introduction of or the insertion of this provisional license moving forward. Honorable Mani.
Yes, Chair, thank you. That is my understanding, and also sub moving that we go in that direction. Subject, my Honorable Hunsinger has raised an important point that there might be provisions in the ARTO Act that could add on weight or count our argument that says this will not help. It might be the ARTO Act can be enabled or assisted by this provision. So I think that's where my colleague was coming from. And I think he's got a point. But the way it is and our submission, yes, Chair, I think I move that this incentive do not be accepted. Thank you, Chair.
Advocate Nell, are you well conversant with this ARTO Act? Or you'll need some time to just check and clean up?
Chair, I think what will assist is if we add this to our list of comebacks. I don't want to say park yeah. bills, because just now I must also have a provisional license to park my amendments. But Chair, as one of our tagged items of concern. On a lighter note, Jay, I think what will assist you is if we actually just get the article up. I don't have the latest one with me. I have the amendments we worked on with the previous committee. But Jay, it will depend on how the demerit points will look in terms of pulling licenses back, because at the time that the ARTO Amendment Act was being considered and those demerit point introductions were brought in, there wasn't a provisional driving license. People would often speak of a learner's license as a provisional license. So there was almost a bit of, these two are similar. They same, but different. So Chi, I think we might just have to have the department just flag the ARTO regulations and the ARTO Act, and just show if there is actual reference to the provisional license. Chair, my concern with the introduction of this, personally, I think a provisional license would be good, but the problem is in the bill, it doesn't give you clarity on where this fits in the system. It gives clarity on the learner's license and the process you have to go through to apply for the learner's license, the same for the driver's license, but it doesn't give detail on this provisional driving license. So, Chi, I think other than where we will get now to section 14, where they say the prescribing, classification, and extent of these licenses, Chi, There's not a lot more in this bill that expands on the provisional license. So either it has to be a clause that's added, which would need the bill to be advertised again because it would be an extension or a new clause, or the department must just clarify exactly where in ARTO this is and whether or not it's just linked to the rehabilitation. But Chair, one can also argue that the rehabilitation is currently linked to the driving license, and you having an existing driving license or a learner's license and then getting infringements based on those. So how then will ARTO treat provisional licenses? So that would need another amendment to ARTO possibly in future if it's not already there. So Chair, I think that is for the department. They could easily do that as we asked the department to clarify concerns in the ERT bill. I think it would assist if we just get an additional provision on these clauses that members have flagged for concern.
Okay. Can we do that? Ndate Mohatu.
Thanks, Chairperson. The ARTO Act does not make reference to a provisional license. It makes reference to a learner's license. Now, Chairperson, as we have been in our discussions, there are a set of regulations post the approval or signing off of this bill addressing a whole range of issues. And I would like to believe that would issues of provisional license would be addressed there. But then you recall, Chairperson, in the debates, in the deliberations previously in the portfolio committee, we said the act would tell you about the what, the who, the when, and the how you will find in the regulations, Chairperson. I just wanted to just state one, that the ARTO Act makes no reference to provisional license, and that two, the Act will simply give the structure, the who, the what, and the when will be addressed in the regulations that would come through as a result. And there is a set, by the way, that was put up for public comments, Chairperson. Thank you.
Advocate, the The department is not assisting us in terms of this part. Convince this meeting in terms of the how, because I think the how becomes an important element in terms of what do we say on this floor. Advocate Nell also says the same, that and I think Honorable Mangu also says the same thing, that Honorable Lunsinger also says the same thing, that it's a noble idea.
It's 12 hours.
We may take a decision as this committee differently if we are armed in terms of how is this idea going to fit in terms of the practicalities, as I hear members say. And those practicalities are not coming as we talk, Advocate Mahatu. You know, when you talk to Mieketsi Sikudo, for an example, Mieketsi will be able to tell you that the view of the department on this matter is 1, 2, 3, 4. This is how we see it unfolding. Give a bit of meat so that as we take this decision, we are not leaving anything behind that has not been said in this meeting. Are we, from the level of the department, DG, able to give a bit of meat in terms of this thing? Because the way Advocate is presenting it, it means we may be able to take a decision here and close this section 19 and move to another section. I don't know if I'm making sense.
You're making sense, Chairperson. Then may I, with your permission, then just do that and maybe give examples. And then, like it was suggested, that that clause be packed, I think the only outstanding thing is just that practical example, and then we come back. It's fine. Okay. I agree with that.
Sure. Thank you very much. Now I don't know whether I should continue using this term packed, because the other advocate was saying something, but you agree with me. But let's then pack this thing and allow the department to give more information on 17, 18, and 19. Right, Advocate Almanel?
Thank you, Chair. The amendment in clause 20 on section 14 is linked to the inclusion of provisional driving license, Chair. If there's an agreement to do away with it, then this amendment falls away, because there will be no need for this amendment. If it's agreed to have it in, then it really is just the addition in adding the words provisional driving license to the heading, as well as adding provisional driving license to subsection 14A. So, Chair, that's clause 20 for section 14. Chair, I think because we've placed it on hold, let me go to clause 21, which looks at section 15. Then, Chair, clause 21, section 15, looks at disqualifications from obtaining these different kinds of licenses. So just looking at the notes, it's amendments to subsection 1F, 7 and 8. They provide for split in reference to disease and physical defects, and removes references to deafness. And then the amendments in 1G may be interpreted as the disqualification linked to addiction. That will only apply if it was certified as an addiction by a medical practitioner. However, the department may be requested to clarify what happens to driving licenses of persons who are recovering alcoholics and recovering drug addicts, who may be sober but will always be regarded as addicts. Then she also, there's no reference to the provisional license in 1H as opposed to the proposed inclusion thereof in the heading. And the amendments to subsection 2 and introduction of the new 3, I indicated in my notes there's no material concerns there. So just to take members through that, the heading obviously then of section 15 will change. Disqualification from obtaining or holding a driver license, provisional license, or a driving license. Then, Chair, we go to 1F. Everything else in the Principal Act remains until we get to F. So here we have F. 1F, subparagraph Roman 7. So this is what it looked like. And these are now the new additions here. Roman 7, any other disease which is likely to render him or her incapable of effectively driving and controlling a motor vehicle of the class to which such license relates without endangering the safety of the public. New addition 8, physical defect which is likely to render him or her incapable of effectively driving and controlling a motor vehicle of the class to which that license relates without endangering the safety of the public, provided that deafness shall not of itself be deemed to be such a defect. And then there's a substitution of G. So Chair, this is what the new G will look like. If he or she is addicted to the use of any drug, having a narcotic effect, or the excessive use of intoxicating liquor and is certified as such by a medical practitioner. And then Chair, an amendment there to sub 2 or substitution. The chief executive officer may, if he or she deems it expedient and on such conditions as he or she may deem fit, declare that any person shall no longer be subject to any disqualification, suspension, or cancellation by a competent authority referred to in subsection 1, B, C, or D, respectively. Provide that in the case of any cancellation, such declaration shall be subject to section 25(9). And then a new 3, the chief executive officer shall, if satisfied that the holder of the license is competent to drive the class of motor vehicle concerned with the aid of glasses, an artificial limb, or any other physical aid, issue or authorize the issuing of a new license in the prescribed manner reflecting the conditions under which it is issued. So, Chair, that is clause 21 for members to consider on the disqualifications of holding licenses. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let me hear members. happy. Honorable Chris Hunsinger.
Chairperson, just a question relating to the definitions, and particularly the definition of chief executive officer as it is specified here. In the definitions, it refers to the chief executive officer or the MEC. Is it then also intended that in this case, where there's reference to chief executive officer, that it can also be the MEC?
Okay. Just a question. A department?
Thanks, Chairperson. And maybe may I refer the Honorable Committee to the transitional provision, section 93 of the Principal Act, with your permission, Chairperson.
Yes, I do permit you.
93, 93. Okay, so it says, Advocate Nellis. It's titled Transitional Provisions. For purposes of sections 3A to 3E, 5, 6, 9, 10, 15, 16, 21, 25, 28, and it goes on like that. Any reference to Chief Executive Officer or Inspector of Driving Licenses or the Inspectorate of Testing Stations shall be regarded to be a reference to the MEC consent. So the answer is in the affirmative, Chairperson. Thank you.
So you propose that we move, Honorable Ansinga?
Indeed, Chairperson, it's been a long day.
Okay, thank you. Any seconder? Any seconder to the proposal?
Seconder, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Let's move to 22. Advocate?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Clause 22 inserts a new section, 15A, which is the surrender of license or reissue of different category of license. So Chair, 15A is then proposed as follows. A person who is the holder of a driving license who desires to A, surrender such license, or B, be issued with a license for another class of motor vehicle authorized by the category of license he or she holds, may request the Chief Executive Officer to cancel such license or to issue him or her with another category of license as applicable. So Chair, sometimes this happens. You get licensed for automatic vehicle and you want it to be changed to manual, or you get licensed for a small vehicle but you want to drive a big rig truck, and then you go through the test and your license has to be changed. Or persons that are no longer feel secure or safe to drive may wish to surrender licenses, or through court applications to declare persons unfit or mentally unstable, then it also allows for the surrender of such licenses. But that is the clause 15, clause 22 for new section 15A for members.
Honorable Manu, Honorable Chris Wensinger.
Thank you, Chair. With your permission, can I ask Advocate just to put that proposed in session so that I can read it verbatim through you, Chair? My question or concern, firstly, is that I thought that if I'm a holder of a smaller category of vehicle license, or driving license rather, for a smaller category, and I go for a bigger one, on coming back of that license, if either includes it, there is never a need to surrender, but rather it is added on there. So I don't know what value that will be adding, just as a point of clarity. Secondly, it says a person who is a holder of a driving license, would that also include the proposed provisional driving license in that explanation? Although we have provisionally parked it, but it is of interest to see if that is anticipated to include exactly provisional driving license, which we have provisionally parked. Those are my two questions seeking clarity, Chairperson. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Advocate.
Honorable Wensinger.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm partly covered on the sticky one on the provisional license. My colleague has covered me there. I would like to know the driving license that is referred to here. Surely, on the registrar, the changes are made. Are we speaking here when we refer to driving license to the driving license card, as referred to in the one which has been the validity being renewed now? What are we referring to? Surely the registration cannot be requested to change. The registration is done on the basis of control, regulation, and authority. No one can request changes on the registrar. So if we then refer to a request for your driving license card, which you carry, to be changed, then surely this mustn't just be driving license, but driving license card. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, honorable members. Madlogov.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is also a clarity-seeking question which would relate to both 15 and 15A in light of what appears in the transitional provision that we've just been read. Because 15A is a new insertion, will then the Chief Executive Officer in 15A also be with reference to the MEC as opposed to the actual CEO?
Are you done, Madlogov?
Yes, Chairperson, I'm done. It's a clarity-seeking question for purposes of cleaning up when we do the drafting eventually, Chairperson, whether we stick to maintaining the Chief Executive Officer, even though the Section 93A is indicating that for purposes where such mentioned provisions, it appears that we mention the Chief Executive Officer, it changes to be the MEC. So in other words, we would be correcting 15 to be MEC as well as 15A to be MEC instead of leaving it out, still mentioning the Chief Executive Officer as the functionary that will be doing most of these functions outlined there. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Madlogovu, Advocate Mkhatu.
Thanks, Chairperson. Maybe let me start off with the question put by Ms. Pumelel. The transitional provisions, Chairperson, specifically makes reference to those sections where if the word Chief Executive Officer appears, same can be substituted or be taken to mean the MEC as the case may be. I hope I've responded to that. Mm-hmm. And then insofar as the question that Honorable Hunsinger asked about whether are we referring to the driving license, invariably, Chairperson, me being in possession of a driving license, or all of us being in possession of a valid driving license, it categorizes the vehicle or class of vehicle that I'm permitted to drive, right? And yes, so that being the case, I would leave it at that as my response to the question. And then now going to what Honorable Manu has said, whether it includes the provisional license. Chairperson, if you go to that section that we agreed to park, the clause itself, it goes on to tell you what a provisional license would include or mean. And may I humbly request Advocate Nell to just go back to that clause? Chairperson, thank you.
Humbly, Advocate Nell.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. It says, you see there that one, we are making an insertion, and then you go on to read further that a license authorizing a driver of a motor vehicle shall be, where was I reading? Okay, yes, A, if you read A, capital A license to be known as a provisional or driving license, right? So it goes on to draw that distinction, unless I missed that, Chairperson. But when I was reading, somewhere I read, it made reference to that. So in responding to the question of Honorable Man, my answer would be in the negative, no. Thank you. Unless, of course, Ntate Mtsatsing would want to correct or amplify what I said. Thank you. With your permission, Chairperson.
Thank you, Advocate.
No, Chairperson. I think the advocate is fine. He has responded to the question, Chairperson. Thanks.
I think the question here says, what's the aim of this section? Because if you upgrade your license, for an example, from driving an automatic, you also want to include a manual. You will be upgrading. It means the card issued to you will then be saying you can drive both automatic and manual. Or if you upgrade to a truck code 10, it means it will give you access also to a car. What are we aiming at? Except to say, should we deem it fit to agree with this? It will exclude the provisional license, as we have put it on hold for now. Honorable Ansinga, you want to say something also?
Chairperson, I absolutely agree with you. The purpose of this whole 15A doesn't sort of come across as achieving anything. I hope that it would at least refer to the driving license card, who it now appears it doesn't. So therefore, the only thing which is changed by this is that the onus is now shifted from the authority, the institution, having the obligation to upgrade your status, now becomes the obligation of the applicant. Because this is the only thing which changes. It is now the responsibility of you and me who upgrade from a B, normal motor vehicle, to a truck, which is C or C1 or EC, to then request an upgrade in the central registrar. Because what we carry is just a proof of what is actually written in a central registrar. And we don't have any access to the central registrar. So should we then drive the truck believing that we've been upgraded on the system, and then being discovered that the upgrade wasn't done, it is our fault because we didn't apply for the upgrade. This is ridiculous, Chairperson. This section should be changed to the authority having responsibility to upgrade a person who in fact has successfully achieved a higher grading of vehicle type. It should be the obligation of the institution. That's what we pay license fees for, and for the service which we expect upon payment. So therefore, it should be the obligation of the institution to upgrade and to maintain the registrar as a reference, should law enforcement acquire that. Other than that, it is the obligation then to, in line with that central registrar, issue you with a driving license card, which is proof of what is written in
the registrar. That's how I see it, Chairperson. And it's really a long day now.
Wow. Mr. John Tatsing, you said you have got nothing to add. Let me hear.
No, thanks, Chairperson. My apologies for coming back again. I really apologize. Just to respond to the Honorable Onsinga's issue about me submitting my driving license card. Remember, on the face of the card, there is the category of motor vehicle which I am supposed to drive. And I then go and upgrade into another category of a driving license card. So on the face of it, although on the registrar, we will then update to say, now you have upgraded your driving license, but the card that you are currently in possession of would still have or denote the previous authorization that you have. Now, if you then produce to a different authority, yes, our law enforcement, when they access NETI system, they will then be able to then see that you have then upgraded your driving license. But it becomes problematic because on the face of it, the card that you have in your possession still refers to the previous authorization that you have. So it's important that once you have then upgraded, although you must then be issued with a new driving license card that then shows the authorization that you are now having with regards to driving a motor vehicle. I submit, Chairperson.
Let me now, can you, with all humility, that they don't tell us this law, what does it seek to achieve? Because what you are telling us is what is happening practically as we speak.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think the issue, with your permission, Chair, the issue is then to submit that driving license card to the relevant authority for it to be destroyed. I submit.
Oh. Okay. Failure to submit will be a crime.
In principle, Chairperson, you may find that I then give it to my friend, my colleague, who then produces that driving license card for some illegal or activity, Chairperson. Thank you. I submit.
Yeah. I think, Honorable Hansinger, we now should just move. Yes,
Chairperson, what Mr. Motsatsing says makes absolute sense, because he's using the word driving license card. And that is exactly what I suggested about half an hour ago, upon which Advocate Bagatu replied that it does not refer to the driving license card, which now at the end of the debate, it seems it does. And if it does, then I absolutely agree, because then it makes sense, because it aligns the driving license card to what is written in the registrar. And that makes absolute sense. And it is an obligation then of you as the carrier of the card to request upgrade, since only you know that you've been upgraded. So it makes absolute sense. And we could have moved on half an hour ago already, Chairperson. I thank you.
So you propose that we move?
I propose, Chair.
Honorable Mang?
I don't provisionally agree. I don't have an obligation to tell anybody, because by my submitting myself to the authorities to be examined and be determined to qualify for that higher grade, that is my submission. as the chair said, it has to happen. I don't need to make anything else. I am there. I've submitted myself, and you are satisfied that I qualify for that grade. So automatically, a new license is going to be ordered for me, and I pay the necessary fees. So what else must I do? I don't have to do anything. And that card is mine. I paid for it. If I want to put it on a frame in my lounge and show my grandchildren, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. However, anybody can use a license, whether it's for an upgraded person or not, if they want to conduct any illegal activity. Chairperson, there is no need for that clause as it stands. Because the question you asked, what does it seek to achieve, has still, well, Ndadems has been contradicted himself. He said something earlier, then he said something different, which tells me absolutely that the answer, fundamental question, what are we seeking to achieve here? And that to me has not been answered. And therefore, I submit, contrary to what my colleague who has had a very long day say, that we totally remove that proposed in session. Thank you. It will avoid any confusion because all what we are told is exactly what is happening now. I submit, as I've heard from the thing. From now on, I submit.
Dr. Makhad.
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm not discounting what the Honorable Mani has said. I want to explain the rationale behind the clause. The clause seeks to address the following: that those who are holders of learner's licenses or who desire to obtain a driving license shall, after applying for that for a license to drive an appropriately registered and graded DLTC, right? For them to go there, be examined in that category of the license, and having used the appropriate vehicle that would match the category that they would want to be upgraded to, Chairperson. I hope that makes sense in this regard, without obviously prolonging the debate, given the fact that there's been a view that it has been a long session.
I think let me try and persuade my colleague here, Honorable Mani. From a layperson's view, what we're talking about is given. It will not harass anybody if it's not there. But for the sake of progress, it is also not doing any harm if we agree with it. And so let me request somebody that will then support what Honorable Hensinger has said. Members.
I support Honorable Chair.
Supported. Honorable Mondise.
Mondise. Honorable Chairperson. I support Honorable Lisa Mang.
I also support Honorable Manu, Chairperson.
Okay. I can hear what is going on. I can see what is going on here.
Chairperson, I'm not going to take you out of the quagmire you are in now. But what I wanted to say is that Chairperson, it's a bill before Parliament, which is before our own portfolio committee. It's really up to the committee after our input, the clarification that we had, to say the portfolio committee is really, it's up to the portfolio committee as the legislators making policies and these kind of pieces of legislation to feel comfortable with what has been presented by the department, and also engaged with the state law advisors and the portfolio committee legal minds, and also our legal minds, to say therefore, if the portfolio committee says, no, this one, we can live without this one. You hear what you are saying at the Department of Transport. However, we still believe that it makes no harm if we take it out, or if we keep it, it also does not make any harm. So we are really at the hands of the portfolio. We can explain as much as we can. But at the end of the day, it's the bill which is before Parliament, which we have tabled. And if the portfolio committee seems very not really looking into it, insofar as what we, I think it's entirely up to you, Chairperson, and the honourable members of the committee to give guidance and clarity and the final say on that one. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
You are deepening my crisis, Babu Hlabisa. Nevertheless, it's okay. Finally, I have the DG, Zehend. DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and to Honorable Members. I think with what the members have said, it is confirmed, Chair, that this is what is already happening. And I think that we had sought to introduce the clause in order to regularize and to confirm what exactly is happening now. And therefore, where we were sitting, it is an important clause in the sense that it now confirms the practice, and it now confirms what is out there. So taking it out, the committee will ultimately leave us only to the vagaries of practice and not have confirmed a status legally in terms of what we are proposing. And that is why I'm of the opinion that, and I humbly submit to the honorable members that the clause should stay as really it confirms and does no other alternative harm in this regard. So I submit, Chair.
Thank you, honorable members. Let me persuade you not to put me in a situation where we will be voting. There is no major issues here. I submit that we would clean up and close this matter in our next meeting, because I want us to deal with minutes because of time constraints. Please allow me to do that, and maybe leave this item. We'll come back to it. It's not a major issue, and deal with the minutes of the 24th of August and the 25th of August. I can hear also that we had a very long day, and maybe I should assist us to move forward. Can we agree, honorable members?
I submit that we agree with you, Chair. Provisional.
Thank you very much. Although provisional. Can we then deal with the minutes of the 24th of August? I've gone through those minutes. That's where we said dealing with ERP bill, we will finalize the bill on the 25th. I did not see anything untoward. Any correction, adoption? Any hand, any taker? Honorable MacDonald?
I propose adoption of the minutes, Chairperson.
Any seconder?
Seconded.
Thank you very much. Let's go to the minutes of the 25th of August. Any taker? Honorable MacDonald?
Chairperson, I don't see anything untowards in the minutes, and I propose for the adoption, Chairperson, but Chairperson, maybe just check that the other members are still here, Chairperson.
Why would you want me to check, Honorable MacDonald? I see them all here. Any seconder? Mondis?
I second your Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, any matters arising on this one? None. Thank you very much. Valerie?
Chair?
The agenda for tomorrow? Any announcement?
No, Chair. It's just you wanted to know about the agenda for tomorrow. It is the first court expenditure department by the department, their briefing. And then it is the briefing on the railway safety bill. Yeah, the introductory briefing. That's all, Chair.
Okay. That is what we are doing tomorrow. Otherwise, honorable members and the department, let's take a break for today. It has been hectic. Let's meet tomorrow and continue with what we need to continue with. And on that note, thank you very much for your participation, the department and everybody. Thank you very much. You are released. Thank you.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Long live, everybody. Long live.
Long live the chair. Long live.
Thank you.
Thank you.